Blog Talk Radio.
Matthew Aaron Show, www.thematthewaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook. That was Celine Dion and my fart orchestra.
Very nice.
With My Farts Will Go On.
Your farts will go on. That's
my
true.
My farts will go on.
Definitely an improvement over a regular Celine Dion song.
Celine Dion, as your dad calls her?
No, he calls her Cian
Dion. I am sitting with
Chuck Salvatore.
And Charles. And
Steve Weirich. Hello, everybody.
Okay, here we are. Big show today.
Yes.
Big show.
That's what I hear.
I got some Shane West coming on in a little bit from Nikita.
Yes.
Very
exciting stuff.
Recorded earlier today with Shane. And
how early? When you say earlier, what do you mean by early?
Early. Ass crack.
Really?
Yeah.
Probably before most people were at
5:30 a.m.?
No, 8 a.m.
No, because I was up at 5:15 this morning.
Yeah, so was I.
He probably
I went to
was.
Bed at like 5:15 this morning.
Which means you were on like an hour of sleep.
Yeah, I'm doing good. I thought that was pretty good.
That's
Celine
good.
Dion. I thought that was good.
I'd see that in concert. Does the orchestra go with?
They should.
They should.
They should. I don't know if they're touring yet.
I would see that over the Canadian Alien.
What, wow. Who's the Canadian Alien?
Celine Dion.
Oh, that is... Oh.
You
Dion,
got
Dion.
Dion.
Oh, Dion.
Dion.
The Canadian alien? What is that?
Well, she's an alien. She looks like one.
Oh, no, she looks kind of like hot. A... You don't think?
Are you on drugs? Oh, it's the 1 hour of sleep. Never mind.
Oh, my gosh.
It's my
no,
eyes.
You used to like her a lot. I don't know if I thought you still did.
I do like her.
Yeah.
I think she's got a good voice.
And the orchestra just supplements. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, Charles, not a good voice?
No.
Who does have a good voice, Charles?
LaJon Witherspoon.
Who?
Are you just making up black people now?
I don't know who
he
that
is. He is a black person.
No.
Oh, really?
He's the lead singer of Seven Dust.
Okay.
Oh, Seven Dust.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, you two got your Lamb of God thing common.
We do, but I didn't know that was the singer of Seven Dust.
What is a Lamb of God?
It
takes away the sins of the world.
I was going to say.
Have mercy on us.
Mercy on us.
Well, as blasphemous as that band is, it's probably... It beats Burn the Priest, because they used to be called Burn the Priest, and then that didn't really go well with the A&R reps.
No.
So they had to change it to Lamb of God, which really is still kind of blasphemous.
Yeah, they couldn't get any Rosh Hashanah gigs.
No. Doubt they'd want any, but yeah.
I have a phone call, and this is going to be, we're going to start off with a little breaking news.
Ooh, do you have news music for us?
Please, do I have news music?
I hope
for you. I always have news music for us. So here we go. Breaking news live from Chicago. Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Sam Abrahamson with Occupy Chicago.
How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself?
I am doing okay. I haven't seen you in a while. Everything going well?
Yeah, everything's going pretty decent. How you been?
I am doing really well, sir. Everything, I guess, is going well. Other than, what is going on with Occupy Chicago? Can you explain to my listeners what it exactly is, what it entails, where it's happening, how they can get involved? I want to hear all about this. Education.
Sure, I'd love to. Well, as you and your viewers may or may not have heard, for about 2 weeks now in New York, thousands of people have been flooding Wall Street. They've been protesting the fact that there's too much corporate influence in our politics. They've been protesting the fact that the voice of the average American is being drowned out by private money, and they think that's a terrible thing. Since then, it has expanded to over 48 cities worldwide, including Chicago. Here in Chicago, it's day 7 right now, so we're just closing up the first week. And we went from 4 people to 50 people in just a few days. Now we've got 70 or 80 people right now as we speak. Again, we are protesting the fact that there's too much corporate influence in our politics, that the top 1%, the rich minority, have much too much of a voice here, while the rest of us are just kind of thrown off to the side. So if you or your listeners would like to get involved, they can go check out our website at OccupyShy.org. If you're not in Chicago, you can check your local area for a protest at OccupyTogether.org. You can check us out on Twitter at #OccupyChicago, and we also have a Facebook page. If you want to come down here and protest with us, you can bring some noisemakers, bring some signs, bring your spirits, bring some friends. Come on down to LaSalle and Jackson right by the Federal Reserve Building and the Chicago Board of Trade, and we'll be here.
Why, Sam, help me out with a couple things, okay?
Sure.
Did you hear about the 80 Occupy Wall Street protesters that were arrested? What's that about?
Let's see. I'm not particularly familiar with that story. I do know that there has been a few outbreaks of police brutality People are doing some civil disobedience in New York, and it's gotten a little bit hairy over there. What seems to be happening is as these movements get larger, the orders come on down from on high for the police to start breaking things up, and people don't generally like that too much. I should also note, as you may or may not have seen, there's some videos going around in New York of, like, some significant police brutality, people getting beaten up, people getting maced who aren't doing anything. That is, I should note that that's only a minority of police officers, because a lot of the police officers are also on our side, because they're working people just like us.
So you guys are having no problems with my good friends, the Chicago Police Department? No problems?
No, they've been very kind to us. They've actually, a few of them have been giving us hot chocolate and coffee overnight because, again, we are trying to stay the night as they are in Wall Street. But the Chicago police are notorious for their corruption and their brutality, but they've been very, very good with us.
Is anyone saying guidelines or rules for your protest, like, what are you guys allowed to do? What are you guys not allowed to do? What's the restraints here? Are there any?
Well, essentially, we've put some of our own rules on ourselves. We are trying to be cordial. We need to be polite to everyone who walks by, even if they're going to say something nasty to us. And above all, we need to be peaceful because that's a really huge, powerful message when you can push peace and not do a violent kind of protest.
So, Sam, explain to my listeners, I know the answer to this, you know the answer to this, but let's explain to my listeners why you are not hearing about this. Because if it's in 48 states, and there's hundreds of people, to some thousands in New York protesting, why is it not on the news? Why are we not hearing about this all over the media?
Well, the mainstream media, as you and I both know, and I think a lot of people suspect this who are listening, the mainstream media is buddies with the same corporate interests that we are trying to protest. These people at the very top of the capitalist pyramid are all buddies. That includes our politicians, Democrats and Republicans. That includes the people who control the media. And that includes pretty much everyone who's got something to lose here. And, if the media was to publicize this and cover this as they would maybe a Tea Party protest, for example, you'd see it balloon even larger, and that's something that they do not want to see. They do not want to see this gain more momentum. They do not want to see that people realize that we are not marginal, that we do have a voice, and so they're going to try and do as much of a blackout as they can on this.
So, Sam, what's the end game here? What are we trying to accomplish? Because, as you know, a lot of protests, they come and they go. There's always war protests, peace protests, whatever the deal is. What are you guys trying to accomplish? And have you heard from any politicians?
As far as I know, we have not heard formally from any politicians, any sort of recognition. And frankly, we don't really want that acknowledgement. We've seen in Wisconsin and Michigan, a few places where politicians have tried to come in and ride the momentum of these protests, and it ends up getting bottled into another talking point story. They try to make it something that's theirs and not that's something about the people. I'm sorry, what was the last part of that question? The other part that I didn't get to.
I was just asking, what's the end game here, Sam? What are we trying to accomplish if we're not going to get the politicians to go to bat for us? And as you're saying, most of them are part of the problem anyways in the regards of they get a lot of their donation money from corporate foundations or people that work for corporate foundations.
Absolutely.
What's the end game here?
Well, essentially, first and foremost, we want to raise awareness with the people. We want the people to know that what they're feeling is right, that this the way that the banks have been robbing us blind, the way that we've been played by these corporate interests is wrong. And once people know that they're not alone in thinking this, that, there's really something going on here, I think that's the first step to getting something done politically. Now, if that means that we need to start to elect new politicians based off of new criteria, that could be one thing. It could be that we can make some really solid demands. If we get a really large movement, we could perhaps make some sort of systemic change. But first and foremost, with a lot of these protests, you're not going to get anything directly done. You're not going to physically make a huge change. But the big goal here is awareness and to bring unity to the people.
Do you guys have leaders for each sect? Like in Chicago, is there a leader? In New York, is there a leader? And is there a way to bring you guys all together, maybe form your own little tea party? Not that you guys are the tea party, but a group like that that has now obviously had influence over American politics.
Right. Well, you know, one of the reasons, first of all, that the Tea Party has influence over American politics is because they are funded by a very small group of incredibly wealthy people who have very large swing in the media, and it's one of those issues where their bark is bigger than their bite. One of the main precepts of this whole Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Chicago movement is that we don't want to have leaders. And so there's no single person who's really in charge. There's no single list of talking points, although we do have a few common strings here. One of the main concepts is that we want real democracy here, that we want a decentralized system and not something where you have to go through one person to get approval. As the movements grow larger, however, we have started to break things up into smaller committees just to divide up the work that needs to be done. However, all of those committee decisions go under approval of everyone at a General Assembly meeting, which we hold twice a day.
Okay, Sam, I do have one of my contributors on the show, Steve Weirich. He sits in with me all the time. Steve, you got a question for Sam?
More of a comment. I'm finally kind of just shocked that this is happening. I've had this kind of same thought to go, and this whole movement that's going on, I'm just very it's uplifting. I don't know. I never heard about it until you called in, but that was always one of my big issues politically was what you guys are doing. So I just want to applaud your efforts. And the only question I have is your specific role. Like, how long ago did you get involved with this? How did you hear about it?
Essentially, I got involved for some of the reasons that you just outlined. You know, myself and pretty much everyone else who's here and a lot of the people that I see on the streets when I'm holding out my sign, everyone's kind of thinking along the same lines that, you know, it's about time. You know, this is a real problem. You know, it's not a Democrat or Republican problem. It's a universal problem. And I was, frankly, just sick of sitting on my ass and watching all these things go on in the news, knowing what the problem is and knowing that I really couldn't do anything, that I was just this passive observer. And so for me, this was an opportunity to get out there and do something. You know, even if we fail, at least we can say that we tried. And I'd rather try and fail than do nothing at all. As far as my personal duties here are, I guess my sort of facetiously titled role is one of the press liaisons. So I'm kind of designated to go out there and speak to people if it's, for example, you guys. I also, as a person who's been studying drumming and various types of music, I'm also out here banging on snare drums and stuff just to make some noise for people. So, yeah.
So did you hear about this today, Sam? Because I know you've been on the streets, but this is a couple weeks old. Caesar says, my producer Caesar just handed me an article. Actually, it's from August 15th. The CEO of Starbucks, I guess, is on your side with this.
Yes.
He's saying he's boycotting on campaign contributions.
Yeah, you know, it's a really good thing. I've seen a few things about how Starbucks is trying to fight the good fight as well. And it kind of goes to show you that, you know, not all corporations are really bad. What we have here is an abuse of the power that they have. You know, you can still do good things and have a lot of money. For example, we see a lot of wealthy celebrities donating to good causes as well. I think what Starbucks is doing is great, and they need to really push that through.
So what's the now, Sam, what's the weekend looking like? What do you guys are going to do this weekend? Do you guys just explain how this works. If I were to show up there, what is my role?
Essentially, we're going to ask you to do whatever you can to help. If you have, we have a lot of signs already here, but if you want to bring your own, that's fine. If we can just get you on the streets, kind of just waving a sign, that's fine. If you want to be making noise, that's fine. There's a lot of people who we're just kind of talking to, whether they are traders here or just other people walking the streets if you want to talk. We also, this weekend, we're planning what we're kind of calling phase two where right now we're kind of centered around the financial district of downtown Chicago. We want to start to stretch out into the ghettos, into various other parts of the city, and start recruiting people there. Another thing that we've been doing is
don't go door to door,
Sam.
Don't go door to door.
Yeah, sort of.
I need you around. I need you around. I don't need you going to 95th and MLK and recruiting, okay? I mean, send smoke signals or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're getting bigger every day, so I think that says a lot.
Well, you know what? And then Warren Buffett, as Caesar pointed out to me, and I read this last week or so, a couple weeks ago, Warren Buffett had a an opinion editorial in the New York Times about how Congress is a little too billionaire-friendly. But why do you think a guy like Warren Buffett, he's got all that money, how are you guys going to get these power people involved with what you guys are doing?
Well, essentially, we don't want to have to rely on the power people. We think very genuinely that if we can get everybody at the base of the pyramid, the larger base that exists in this country, the lower 99% of the people in this country, that the wealthy minority is going to have problems fighting us either way. They're going to have problems ignoring us, and they will essentially not be able to overpower us. However, like I said before, there are some corporations and there are some wealthy individuals who are sympathetic to our cause. I know that Michael Moore spoke in New York in support of Occupy Wall Street, as well as Noam Chomsky. So I think that as this movement goes on, we will continue to see more notable support. And hopefully, if they're really in line with the spirit of the movement, they won't allow their names to actually overwhelm the main goals of the movement.
I understand you there. Now, would you say you guys talk probably a lot of politics when you're just hanging out over there and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
What's the opinion about Obama now trying to just tax millionaires? Do you guys think that's enough, not enough? To raise the taxes on just millionaires, would you like it? Like, what are you guys talking about when it comes to what's going on currently in Congress and with President Obama?
Well, we think Obama is taking some good steps, but he really isn't taking enough. Essentially, I think that raising the taxes on millionaires, multimillionaires, billionaires, that definitely needs to happen, and needs to happen on a very large scale, and it needs to be a tiered sort of system, you know, different brackets for very specific incomes. Some of the criticism that we hear on the streets, as well as a lot of the criticism that you'll hear in the mainstream media, is, you know, all of those left-wing crazies, they want to raise taxes on everybody, and, you know, you shouldn't have to pay higher taxes. And essentially we're saying no, you know, if you're in the middle class or even just slightly above the middle class, we don't want to have you taxed up the ass. You know, that's not the problem. The problem is this rich minority who is not paying their fair share. In terms of tangible solutions to that, one thing that you can do to make a huge difference is allow the Bush-era tax cuts to be repealed / expired. That will make a huge difference. The next thing that we need to start doing is requiring these corporations to pay their fair share and stop all these loopholes. We need to close all these loopholes that they're using. For example, as you may or may not have heard, General Electric paid, I believe it was $0 in taxes last year.
Was $0.
Because they have, I'm sorry?
It was $0. You're correct.
Yes. And it was $0. And the reason that they're able to do that is because of all these little tax loopholes that are in this massive complex tax code that we have arranged. And they have an army of people who just kind of explores these loopholes and goes to different offshore locations. So we need to close those loopholes and start making large corporations like this pay their fair share.
I think, Sam, I got to tell you, I'm very proud that you called in, very happy that you called in. I think you're very well informed. I think you're a positive and good voice for this.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening.
No, well, I'm very happy you did it because I do want people to know more about this. And obviously, I'm not ran by any corporate company. I don't got to worry about Aaron. So
that's right. Well, you know, it's all another interesting thing. I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was just saying, it's nice to get this out because in a couple of years, who knows, I may get fired if I did it.
I hope that's not the case. But an interesting thing, you know, is with this sort of independent media wave that we're riding right now. You know, with shows that aren't corporately owned, such as yours and others, with student newspapers and various activist organizations, we have those on our side. But also, it's really amazing to see how much of this has been spread just through blogs, Twitter, and Facebook, and Reddit, and Dig. I mean, these independent sites, it really shows you that we don't need a centralized media to organize ourselves or to communicate anymore. The technological revolution with the Internet is making new things possible. So that's great.
I guess my final question for you, Sam, then, is I was going to ask you, I totally just blanked. What was I going to ask? I had a good one. Damn it. Mother. Let me think. Hold on. I'm in deep thought here because I don't want to miss. I was like, this is something I really want to know. I'm thinking.
All right.
Matt, don't give yourself an aneurysm.
I'm thinking here. It was a good one. God dang it.
No, you know, I just gotta say it's gotta be quite the sight to see these white collars walk around and you guys protest. Because I know exactly where you're at. I used to walk down that part of Jackson all the time, and I always wonder what all these people do. I'm like, well, what do these people do? They just walk up and down Jackson, or what do they do? So it's gotta be kind of like, are you right by the McDonald's there, or where are you guys at? At that corridor there?
We're right on the corner of LaSalle and Jackson. That's our main area. We're also marching around Michigan and kind of around the Millennium Park area. We're kind of all over the place right now. But, yeah, right by the Federal Reserve Building on LaSalle and Jackson.
Got it. Got it. My turn.
What is it?
Sam, I do want your final opinion on this. What do you say to the people that say it is those millionaires and billionaires that create us our jobs and they should not be taxed?
That's an easy one. I would direct them to an Economics 101 textbook. When you say that the rich people create our jobs, you're kind of skipping a step there, because the demand for goods and services is what requires a business to open up more jobs in the first place. So those rich people wouldn't be rich people if people weren't demanding and buying in the first place. And those people who are demanding those goods and services, that's the lower 99%. That's the average man.
You're correct.
So there you go.
Sam, I got to tell you, you were one of the best writers. I've read your work. You're fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
You're creative. I really like you. You're well-spoken. You're a very intelligent gentleman. As long as this is going on, I would love for you to check in with us on other shows. I'd love to hear more about what's happening.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to talk to you anytime.
Thank you, Sam, so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you again. Yeah,
all right.
Definitely.
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
There you go. There you have it. That was our breaking news.
The Matthew Aaron News.
Occupy Wall Street, Chicago.
Sponsored by Starbucks.
And this Republican sitting next to me the whole time. Yeah, I wish.
Can I just point out one thing?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you rather talk to a guy like Sam than like the...
Intelligent, right?
Yeah, than like some of the people on the show.
He's younger than both of us.
He is?
I think he's only like 21, 22.
Oh, he's way ahead of his time then.
Yeah.
He'll do well.
He's a very good writer.
Yeah.
His is one of the only screenplays in class that I didn't put in my paper shredder.
Oh, is the school chum. All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, very smart. Very smart.
Yeah.
Charles, got any of your Republican
hatred? Okay, first of all, how many times do I have to tell you I'm not a Republican?
You are the worst independent then on the planet.
I don't like any politician. I don't like any of them. They're all full of shit.
So you just hate it all.
I hate politicians. They're all full of shit. They're all liars, and they're all thieves. And what do I have to think about that interview? I was reading this Price Sports Guide. They got the Bears listed as the wild card. What the hell's wrong with them?
Yeah, that is kind of stupid.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of wrong, too.
It's about the same amount.
It's like 300 million people in the world.
I think those guys are right. The things they're protesting are right. Like, yes, corporate America kind of
blows. I did see you roll your eyes a few times. What's the eye roll?
Oh, it's kind of retarded what they're talking about. It is. It's kind of bad. Like, I agree with them in principle. Yes, obviously, all the news media is controlled by, like, three people. And there are supposed to be FCC regulations.
We have Lee Capreas breaking in. Fuck the rich people. Fuck them. I hate rich people.
That sounds
but, you know, the idea that you're just, you know, First of all, I went on their website before I went on the show, and I read about four pages of it, and I walked away knowing less than what I went in going with, because their webpage is just filled with big words and no message. Like, it says nothing.
You mean these are intelligent people that are protesting? Are we in trouble?
Second of all, I was looking at pictures from all the people in New York. They're all like pot-smoking hipsters that all look like they haven't showered in 3 weeks.
That I cannot... we shouldn't say they all.
No, but the ones that I saw pictures of.
There was a good portion where it's hip and cool to be a pot-smoking hippie that goes and protests.
I got to ask, would you rather talk to these young gentlemen or streetwise?
CEOs of Star...
I'd rather talk to streetwise.
Yeah,
streetwise. They make you laugh.
So, Steve, I know you and I feel pretty much the same as Sam and them do.
I do, actually. We've been
talking about this for a long
time.
But,
I mean, I'm sorry, but, I mean, obviously, yes, we live in America. You have the right to
protest.
And
no one's saying corporations are bad, by the way.
No.
Just too much power in politics.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Congress, I think it was Robin Williams that said they might just be like NASCAR and have their sponsors tattooed on the back of their jacket.
That's pretty
funny. I mean, they should, and let's just be honest with everybody. Sorry, Robin Williams.
I don't know who Robin Williams stole that from. Yeah. Well, yeah, you stole it from Robin. He stole it from someone else, so don't worry.
But, I mean, these protests, they're not going to do anything.
Well, I do.
Mean, they're really not going to change anything. They're not going to do anything.
All right, we let Charles have the last word.
And
this
I'll say this,
problem.
Especially in Illinois, they're not going to change anything because the powers that be will not let any of the other people that are running against them get on the ballot. They'll just knock them off. That's
all
what they
the
do
good,
all the time.
All the good we did after my farts will go on,
right.
That 25 minutes of good,
yes.
Chuck just done did in 3 minutes. So he very, very
did.
Great. Very, very good.
I told you.
It wouldn't
I'm
be
worried.
The Matthew Aaron show without double standards happening.
I warned you and you still let me come on. So
I'm going to play the Shane West interview. When we come back, we are going to be talking about Bill Simmons and his article today on ESPN.com, which made me
vomit. Or
I have some very strong words for William Simmons. I'm not a big fan anymore, and I used to be a huge fan. We will be getting a phone call from Jason Ferrari from First and Long. We're going to talk about the Walter Payton book that's coming out on Tuesday. We are going to be talking about baseball last night.
I was
going to
ask if we could talk about baseball from last night.
Gutsy, heroic.
Very gutsy. It's gutsy that they're protesting.
It's a little more gutsy than making a double play.
I was going
to
say.
How would you like to be a Boston Red Sox walking down the street today?
Well, we'll talk about that when we come back. So I will. We'll be back in about, we're not going anywhere. We're going to do Shane West here. Shane West from Nikita,
right.
Which you can catch 7 Central Time, 8 Eastern Time on CW. And executive produced by McGee, Maggie Q stars in it, and she's a hottie, and she can kick some ass. And Xander Berkeley's on it, and Melinda Clark, who you may know, and who's your crush, Caesar? Producer Caesar's crush, Lindsay Fonseca, who I hear is amazing. From Caesar Marconi. I've actually watched Nikita. I just don't know who Lindsay Fonseca is. She's probably the other broad. She's her partner. Yeah, that doesn't help me. Is she Maggie Q's partner? Because I've watched the show. You've never seen Nikita, have you? No.
Lindsay and Caesar sitting in a tree.
All right. I don't think that's an insult to him. Here's my completely out of my... Look, I sound like the biggest nerd ever talking to Shane West. Because he's like one of the cool kids, you know? And I'm like, can I play AV Club? So...
High school all over again.
And by the way, I know we have a lot of Twitter listeners tonight because they were sending in questions left and right for this guy. So if you're listening, you're going to hear your questions answered. But we'll go to Shane West here. Welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show, and this is my interview with Shane West. We have Shane West here on the phone. How you doing, Shane?
I'm doing very good. How are you guys?
Very, very good. We're taping this interview in the morning for tonight's show, but I got to tell you, I got a lot of questions on Twitter and Facebook from fans of yours. You are quite popular.
Well, that's good to hear. I guess that's good to hear.
Well, you don't have a Twitter or a Facebook, though, right, Shane? Because
no, I actually do have a Twitter.
Oh, you do?
Okay. It's at West_1. And Facebook, I don't have.
Okay.
If Facebook, I technically have, but it's really more for friends and family. So if
right.
there's any
you know, Facebook's out there saying that they're Shane West and stuff. It's not me.
Yeah, highly doubtful then. Okay, good. Because I'm like, man, for a guy who's not all over the internet, you got the girls coming after you left and right.
I'm going to have to write this down then.
Well, I wanted to talk to you personally myself, too, because believe it or not, a 28-year-old male, myself, is very much in your work. I got to tell you, you were fantastic on one of my favorite shows ever, which is ER.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and
that means a lot because it's hard. You know, that show obviously lasting 15 years and so many different actors and actresses to come. You always hope that you could be a part of that machine as well and not, you know, a hindrance. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, and you played Dr. Ray Barnett. And what was great about your character was, and they did this on the show a lot. John Wells did this and before him. What was great about that show was they never wrote the same character twice. And your character, though, I thought was even more so one of the most original characters on the show.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Because you weren't you didn't have a doctor personality, if you will.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you, how much of that personality, where Ray's a musician on the side, and how much of this personality was written already, or how much of this was taken from you personally once they got to know you and enjoy your acting on the set? Or was this all planned out ahead of time?
This was all, I believe, planned during the run of it. I don't believe it was ahead of time. I know what happened. The story was is they were looking for – the show was getting younger again. You know, my first season, the year before, Parminder and Linda Cardellini had just joined. Scott Grimes was suddenly going to become a major character, even though he wasn't supposed to be in the beginning. And Noah Wiley was and Ming-Na and Alex Kingston were stepping down, so it was sort of another it was basically the third transition on the show.
Yeah.
And they wanted a younger guy again, and basically what really happened is I took a general meeting with Wells and all them, and I actually had played a concert the night before with my old band Johnny Was, and I still had eyeliner on that I thought I had wiped off. And I had a little bit of nail polish and whatever, and I walked into the room, and I think they just, I don't know, their eyes lit up, and I guess that might have, and I just explained to them what's going on in my life, and they pretty much wrote the Rock Doc character for my own life. But then, because I took the show so seriously, and I took the character so seriously, I was essentially the one who lobbied for Ray to get fired from the band and become a serious doctor, because I didn't really want him to be a flake like he was kind of in the beginning of the first year of season 11. So, it kind of was a lot of what was just going on in my own life.
Right. And what was interesting, too, about that was then once you get fired from the band, they kind of take all that angst and drama from you being in the band, and now they put it on you and Neela's the character of Neela on the show. And what was – now tell me about – it's not a tragic ending per se what happens to you. I mean, you don't die. But whose idea was that? Did you have a hand in how you were written off that show?
Well, here's the real reality to that as well is I had signed a 3-year contract.
Yeah.
And coming into season 13, that the year that happened, that was my last year. But obviously, I was at the bottom of the totem pole. You know, everyone had been on the show for a while, and Makai had been on, and Maura Tierney and Gorin had been on there forever. So everyone could sense that the show might be coming to an end, not because the fans weren't there, but because it was so expensive.
Now,
the show was just way expensive by its 13th, 14th year. So no one knew if it was going to go one season or more. And I basically said, since I needed a new contract, but they were probably going to give me one over a hiatus. So I asked for a 1 year because we didn't expect the show to go much longer. And I think what they did is offered a 4 or 5 year contract, something something a little obscene because we knew that it wouldn't go that long. So I kind of was like, well, I just don't see that happening. And meanwhile, television was calling for a couple of other projects. So I took a pilot. And thankfully, since we were always, you know, very friendly with each other, me and the producers and things like that, they realized they had put themselves in a hole and that Ray was going to be leaving. So how were they going to make Ray leave? But because they didn't dislike me and I didn't dislike them, they didn't want to kill me. And so I asked for them to only take one leg, but they decided to take two because they thought it was more dramatic. And, you know, they ended up being great because I wasn't in season 14. I came back for a couple in season 15.
Yes.
And when I watched season 14, they talked about Ray a lot. And that was really cool of them. And the fact that they came back and did the ending that they wanted by having Ray come back with Neela and Neela to go visit him in the finale is, you know, I was very appreciative of that.
Yeah, and, you know, I also wanted to bring up, you were on another great television show before Nikita, which was Once and Again, and I have been told, I wasn't a frequent watcher of the show, I don't know why I never caught it, but my ma loved it, and I know a bunch of people that work in network television who tell me it is one of the most underrated shows of the last 20 years. What was your experience like working on Once and Again? What was that like? Because it was a very real show. I mean, it had a lot of real dramatic family issues on that show.
Once and Again was just a phenomenal experience. And I was 20 years old. I'm 33 now. I was 20 years old when I shot the pilot. And I was 21 when the first season went into play, 23 when it was done. And, you know, for a show that, you know, was nominated for a couple of Emmys and SAG Award won one, we were gone pretty quickly in 3 years. And it was a bummer. You know, we had some serious diehard fans, and it just having a hard time taking off with certain ratings and time slots and things like that. But honestly, it was a great show. And I can say that and not be be embarrassed about it. I mean, for me, it was my acting class. You know, I never really took classes before that, and to be able to go to school with Ed Zwick and Marshall Herskovitz and the team that did 30-something in my so-called life, I was very fortunate. And to work with the actors that I got to do, to work with, and the writers and the directors that came in, Peter Horton, who I loved, who directed a bunch of those episodes. It was like a second family, really.
That's very good. Did you always want to be an actor, Shane? Because I know you started at a very young age. So I've always wondered when I meet people who were like, because you and I are similar ages, and I always wondered, it was always a fight for me to get to do what I want to do. My parents, you got to go to college, you got to do that. When you get your degree, my dad would always say to me, when you get your degree, do whatever the fuck you want. So, Shane, what was it like growing up? How did you get into acting? How did you discuss this with your parents? What was the plan here? How did this happen?
Well, I mean, it was never my original intention. My parents are both musicians, and I grew up with them being in rock bands, not popular ones, but you know, rock bands in Louisiana, and growing up at sound checks and band practices and things like that. So I just figured that would be something I wanted to do. Movies and television I was fascinated by and enjoyed. And I had a very vivid imagination, but we lived in Louisiana. When we moved to California, but with my mom, she wanted to study law in California, I still didn't get into acting. I actually didn't get into acting until I was about 17. So I couldn't say I was a child actor, thankfully, because I was able to grow up as a somewhat normal human being before the entertainment industry takes over. And didn't really work until I got out of high school. But I started playing the guitar and I started doing acting at the same exact time. I got my own band together and started auditioning for commercials at the same time around 17 years old. And acting just happened to take off quicker. And it became a passion over time. In the beginning, it was more of a lark. And very quickly. When it took about 2.5 years for me to be hired for one single part, I couldn't get hired for not even a commercial. Instead of quitting, it made me much more intent on proving my detractors wrong, and by making this be my life goal, because it was so important to me, and it becomes so important to me. And that's kind of how it all really started for me. I mean, really, at the start from there, besides doing a million TV shows with one, two-line parts and two lines here and two lines there, I booked a Barry Levinson film called Liberty Heights.
Yes.
With Adrian Brody. And at the same time, when I was in Baltimore shooting that, I booked the pilot for Once and Again, and that was pretty much the start of my career.
Very good. Now, how you mentioned, you know, you were kind of joking, but you say before the entertainment business takes you over, you are a guy that seems to me like you got a very level head on your shoulders. I've always had this feeling about you. You don't hear about you in the tabloids often, you know, unless you have a date. but I mean,
that's almost impossible to hide. Yeah.
But I mean, you've never heard a bad word about Shane West. And how is it that you keep your head on your shoulders being in this business where everyone wants you?
Well, I think that comes from my family and just the, you know, the love that I have and have with my family. And they, you know, my mom would, you know, knock me upside the head if I, you know, got an ego or did anything, you know, out of control. And I think that's a good start. And I think by not having success away, I guess my first bit of success was 1920. So I was still, I mean, I guess you're still a man, quote unquote, once you hit 18, but I certainly wasn't a man yet. And, you know, mentally. So, but, you know, I've been raised properly with, you know, to be on your best P's and Q's and, you know, born in Louisiana with a, you know, religious family at the time of just being, you know, nice to everyone and saying sorry and saying thank you. And just, it was just, and then it was just something I learned how to become my own person after that. And I think sometimes that happens. You know, when I was raised, when I started in acting and started becoming a little bit more successful, TMZ didn't exist. There were cameras outside of nightclubs and things like that, but there were very little. And so all of the chaos that TMZ and all these other shows or blogs or whatever catch, they didn't catch it back then because it just wasn't as big of a medium. And now it's out of control. So now it's very easy whether you're it's very easy to get caught for something. But also haven't done much in my personal life that is you know, I've done things in my life that I'm sure could be newsworthy or tabloid worthy, but it's really got to be at the bottom of the barrel. It's not comparatively newsworthy to what other people do. So if what has happened in my life, whether it's gnarly or for better or for worse, is nowhere near what people usually do. So
no, that's a very good
answer. Just because I try to keep a level head.
Oh, that's a very honest answer. I like that because a lot of people say, you know, oh, I've done nothing wrong. I'm so boring. You're like, no, I've done stuff, but it ain't up there.
but it's just not. In the end, it's pretty basic and mediocre. And but that's just, you know, everyone's human, so you know you do your things. But I don't have many demons, and thankfully, and I have a very positive support system, which I'm trying to keep going for the rest of my life.
Well, one, I want to say that's awesome that your parenting was so great. I think that says a lot about a person's character, that they respect their parents like that, and that's great of you. And the other thing is, this coming from a rock and roll guy, you don't cause any fucking trouble.
Well, you know, with the germ stuff, you know, I like to call it, I think with that background, you know, I can get, you know, certainly wild and crazy. It's getting harder as I'm getting older, but, you know, I like to call that period of time organized chaos. And that's kind of how I am. You know, it's the germs were another part of my life that I've thoroughly enjoyed. Yeah. I'm sure it hasn't been great for my health, but it certainly has been good for my soul. And you know, sometimes that's more important. And There was some crazy times, crazy rock and roll times. I'm sure I could write a book at some point. I still managed to try and be safe. And there's certainly someone out there looking for me, looking out for me, that's helped me out at times. I guess the best way is I think it's more of the energy that you have about you. If you have a certain energy, I think certain negativity will flock to you, or it'll dissipate, or it'll disappear from you.
Yeah.
I think it's that energy that you or aura, or however modern way you want to say it, is that kind of defines who you are, and will define the incidents that happen around you.
This is just wild, because the way you speak, you sound like an old soul, and the way that you speak, it reminds me of your character on Nikita, except here's the deal. Like, when I watch that show, I'm like, especially the pilot, I'm like, was this show, like, I'm thinking like they wrote this character for like Michael Douglas or something. And here's a 33-year-old guy playing this character. I mean, you got the lines of this old grizzled veteran, yet it's a 33-year-old. What was it? Do you think they originally intended this role to be for an older actor, and then you just blew him out of the water, or what happened here?
I think that's kind of what happened. I know for a fact that, when the breakdowns came out for this role, I was looking at 3 or 4 different shows. I didn't even know if I wanted to do television, but I was sent actually all of them that I was having a hard time saying no. I really clicked to Nikita, because as soon as I found that they weren't dead set serious on Michael being, because it said mid-30s to late-30s, and I'm 33, and at the time was 31, so I knew for sure that I'd have to be close to 40 to get this role, or older. But I went in on the audition, and something happened where I changed their mind. I left the room. They asked me to come back. I went back for a second time, and then they told me to wait again. And then they said they were going to test me, and it became kind of a big ordeal. And the competition that I had, one person was on videotape, so I got to see who that was, and the other person I knew personally, and he was certainly older than me. So I thought that I had either I was getting the role, or I had no chance in hell. There was nothing in between for me, the role of Michael. And, it was fun, because I got the character with him. I've always had a deep voice in general, but, I made it darker and deeper for the role. And, basically built on some of the negativity that I've had in my life to bring out that character as well, from just like the actor did in the original film, who was certainly a lot older than me, and like Roy did in the first series.
Yeah. Isn't it great, though, too? Because, I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. If I get a script from the CW, I'm like, okay, I'm a little worried here. but what a cast on this show, man. Maggie Q, Aaron Stanford, Melinda Clark, Xander Berkeley, like, and then you get these scripts that are really good. It's filmed. I'm telling you right now, and this is no bullshit, I'm telling you, the photography on this show is better than anything else on network TV, too. Like, it just looks like a movie, this show. These are like hour-long movies every week. And so did you have fear going back into television? What was it like in the movie industry at the time? And did you see this cast and you're like, okay, I want to be a part of this? Like, how does this all go?
Well, obviously the movie industry has taken a pretty serious hit a good 4 years ago. And as in entertainment in general, obviously with music as well too, and as they're trying to figure out through the internet how to save everything, it's been more difficult, because now with film, it's either a giant blockbuster or a very small independent. In the middle of the road movies, as in budget wise, are very difficult to get funded now. So it's more of a difficult ride. But Holman was having fun. I was doing more of independence, or another What We Do Is Secret type film to kind of break out, because that those are the type of films that make me happy. And I've been very fortunate with film and television. And with television, I was certainly spoiled, because with Once and Again in ER, I didn't want to join in another show that wasn't going to be, you know, have some sort of impact as well. And I thought that Nikita could have that. And so far, I've been right. And it's a different genre for me. And it's a lot of fun and a lot of work. It's the most amount of work I've ever put on. Besides the film, What We Do Is a Secret, is the most amount of work I've ever put together for a project. And we shoot a lot of 6-day weeks. And to make it look like you said, the photography and things like that, Danny Cannon, who shot the pilot, pretty much backed us into a hole. In a good way, of having to maintain the excellence of the look that he did with that first episode. So because of that, we've done a full 22 episodes of last year. We're supposed to do 23 this year. It's maintaining and just maintaining that look, and we made it look like a movie. So
yeah.
To be able to do that week in and week out is pretty difficult. And you're right, the cast, that's really what Maggie Q was already signed on when I was testing for this show. And I was, guns blazing for that. I thought that was great. I thought it was a wonderful idea. And then I just got so fortunate to find a young, new actress in Las Vegas, who's actually, I guess, been acting since she was a baby. And, the great Xander Berkeley, and then Melinda Clark and Aaron Stanford are wonderful. And, I was very, very happy with that, because you never know what they're going to cast after you're cast. I was cast second. And you never know what's going to happen after that. And they put a movie cast together, basically,
yeah,
for this television show. And I think that's what's made the show work, because we've been able to have courage under fire when we've had some really rough days, like I'm going to have today. but, you know that you can put it together and keep it together.
Well, Shane, how much of that do you think has to do with the fact that this is a McGee-produced show? Or if there's someone I'm leaving out and you want to give credit to, please help me with that. But I just get this sense with McGee that everything he does, he wants it to look top-notch. He wants the photography and the action and everything to look like it's a $100 million movie. Do you think I'm wrong in that aspect, or how much do you think that has to do with it?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that it starts at the top and it trickles down. And I think that we have put together, and McKee has put together, a great group. He and Peter Johnson, and then with Danny Cannon and Craig Silverstein, who is the brainchild behind the Nikita reboot. It's very important for them to keep it action packed, but yet interesting, and still be story driven. And our producer Mark Albert, has to do the day to day work, which is difficult job to do, and you're always the bad guy, but he does a great job at it. And we're into season two. So currently we found the kinks and the things that didn't work in season one, and now we're basically putting that team together. And I mean that from catering to the camera and grip department to production, to writing, to everything. And we feel like we've got the birth of a family happening right now, going into season two, and we're hoping we can make that stronger as the years go by.
Well, I got a bunch of questions from Twitter about the show, but I'd be remiss if I did not ask you two more of my own. And one is, you got to work with Sean Connery. Where's that rank on the career highlights?
It was really, I don't know if it's bucket list, but it's certainly up there.
Yeah.
What was funnier was that being American and raised, I was never really much of a Bond kid. But that film, everyone was a European actor. So I was like the only American actor on that project.
Yeah.
And they were just giddy. Jason Fleming, Tony Curran, Stuart Townsend, they were all just giddy. absolutely giddy because they were truly raised on those pictures and on those films. And I was not nervous at all until all of a sudden we did our first scene, and then it finally, the legend of Connery kind of affected me, and then I was pretty nervous for the rest of the shoot. But he was a great guy, and he treated everyone with the utmost respect, and it certainly was it's a wonderful experience, and it will be certainly interesting to look back on.
That's you use a lot of keywords there that I'm not going. I imagine it's interesting working with Sean Connery. Let's just put it that way. Interesting's the word.
Well,
interesting.
I don't even mean that to have too much of a double meaning.
No, I know.
You know, there was difficult times on that set, based off of personal relationships that didn't involve me, thankfully. But he was always very, you know, he's had a very interesting history and of people having differing opinions. But on our particular project, actually treated everyone amazingly, and was an actual sweetheart. He was really great. I remember we were always told you can't ever make fun of his accent, but apparently all the actors started making fun of his accent, and he enjoyed it. He really was in a good mood to begin with on that film. It's a shame that it had to end the way that it did. But
yeah. Well, I did want to bring up, A Walk to Remember is a film at the time I had a girlfriend. And of course, you hear this from every guy. Made me go see it. It's actually very good. And I catch it on TBS every now and then when it's on, and I'm like, you know, why am I watching this again? But I watch it. And Shane, how? First of all, the women after that movie, they had to be all over you. Like they probably were before. But come on, A Walk to Remember, you're getting like stalker fans at that point, right?
Well, I mean, the thing, yeah, it was an interesting time because, you know, I think I was 24 and we were, you know, the industry was still booming and was still good. And you were just waiting for a hit and hoping something would work out. And, you know, I took that movie because I knew it was a good book and a good writer and I knew it was a good project. And also I had done a couple of teen films that hadn't done very well. I knew that the story was really kind of focusing around Landon Carter, the character that I played. But yet I knew the hype was going to go towards Mandy because of people knowing, you know, who she was and her being, you know, a sweetheart in her singing background and things like that. So for me, it kind of felt like a safety net. I was almost like, well, hopefully people like Mandy and want to come see this movie. And then I get, you know, lucky from it, you know?
Yeah.
It certainly worked out. I mean, I think the hardest thing about A Walk to Remember was the success of it made it very difficult for me to feel comfortable, you know, going to a mall or, you know, an amusement park or anything like that, because things changed very rapidly in my life and it made it very difficult to be anonymous.
So that was the holy shit moment.
What's that?
That was the holy shit moment. Walk to Remember.
Walk to Remember was the holy shit moment of my career. Yes. You know, before then I had been being recognized by people in their 40s and their 50s who were like fans of Once and Again.
Yeah.
And then a couple of occasional, you know, young people that had seen Whatever It Takes or Get Over It. But like, which has gained more success over the years now. But like, then that was the holy crap moment for sure. And I was very happy after League, I started working on What We Do Is Secret immediately after that and ER at the exact same time. That was able to kind of like during that time, the chaos kind of dwindled down a bit because I didn't make A Walk to Remember Part 2 or whatever. So
that would have been hard.
I was content. Yeah, I was content. I was content with that. But it seems like, I mean, I you know, I'm enjoying Nikita for sure. But it seems like, I don't know if it's Toronto or because I haven't been in LA a lot, but it's starting to get a little more difficult to go places again.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a good, Nikita's truly being, effective with the fans, which would be great.
I think that could be your Funnier Die video, Shane, A Walk to Remember 2. You meet another dying girl and you're like, oh, fuck.
That's not bad.
Again,
I actually talked to those guys, but I didn't really have any wonderful ideas to do. So,
no, you'd be
one of these days. Maybe I'll do one of them.
It'd be good to see you do a comedy again, because you have this, like,
I would love to do that.
You're funny.
I've done them before, but it's just not many people know it. It's a little underground, and I've had some great auditions for some. I took a lot of meetings for some comedy movies in the past.
Yeah.
Jesus, what was the one of them I can't even remember now? But it's a difficult world to break into, because nowadays they hire all their friends.
Yeah.
As I would too. If it's SNL based or things like that. But what's great is I took a few meetings, and they were just so much fun, because I haven't auditioned for those things in a very long time, and the reaction that I got from the studio and the producers was shock in a positive way. So it was very cool. So I'm going to certainly work on that now that they know they have the chops. I'll work on that whenever I get the hell some sort of free time.
Well, yeah, should do a comedy, because you're fucking funny, man. You are. You really
thank
are.
Thank you, man. thank you.
And I also want to compliment you on What We Do Is Secret. If you're looking for, in my mind, Shane West's best work ever as an actor so far, you got to see this movie. It didn't get the hype it deserved. It did not get the promotion it deserved, in my mind. And I think this ranks up there with some great biopics performances. I really do. So,
thank you.
I do.
Well,
want
you know, it's funny you mentioned
know.
McG. McG apparently was a big fan of the film, which I was not aware of. But it's hard to be aware of someone who's a big fan of What We Do Is Secret, because it went the true independent circuit route.
Yeah.
We went to a lot of festivals, but the smaller ones, and it was difficult. I mean, we did do LAFF, which was great, but it's hard when you were a true independent film, but we're glad that the people that have seen it have really responded to it, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, it's not too hard to get a hold of now, so I suggest that if your fans are listening, which I'm sure they are, and my fans are listening, check this movie out, especially if you like punk rock music. You're going to really dig it.
Yeah.
So I do want...
That's a good story, too.
Yeah, I do have questions from the fans, if you don't mind taking a few. These are your loyal Twitter followers. Question for Shane from Shorty Got a Lou. I don't know what that means, but here we go. What is the most rewarding thing you have done in your life, career wise or not?
I think the most rewarding thing outside of the career has been, trying to keeping the family together, keeping my family together, and also creating a new one with the group of amazing friends that I have now. And that's the most rewarding for sure. Career-wise, since I've always been a musician at heart and as well as an actor, I think one of the most rewarding things has been able to have done film What We Do Is Secret, and then suddenly become the front man for the Germs in reality and be able to tour around with them for 5 years. I mean, when that happened, I remember a reporter telling me, in the history of filmmaking, that's never happened. Is that special to you? And it is. And it's something that I felt like I could basically retire with, or I could retire now and be happy with those accomplishments.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's a good answer. That's very good. Misha Toscano asks two questions. She has that I thought were pretty good out of 1,000. Shane, will we get to see when Michael first met Nikita and what made him choose her for Division? That's the first
one. I think for sure. I don't know if we'll see that necessarily in season 2, but I think that's something that they should definitely do. What we will see, which... should make you happy is that there's already been a flashback done of where Michael is watching Nikita, who is a new recruit. So they don't have a history yet.
Okay.
He's intrigued by her attitude. So you will see a little bit of what she asked, actually.
And then her other question is, and it's embarrassing, so I'm all about it. Shane, we'd all like to know if Maggie is a good kisser, especially after she said that you were.
Oh, then I can't say she's bad.
No, that would be rude.
No, she's amazing. She's a wonderful kisser. We have been blessed to have some pretty good chemistry, and I love that girl.
I was gonna say I'd be afraid to fuck with Maggie Q. She seems like she's got some moves.
Tread lightly.
Tread lightly. This one is from Sabby No Can Do. Maggie recently said she envisions Michael and Nikita having a little boy together. How does Shane feel about that?
I mean, I think, wow, God, how do I answer all that without a bunch of, there's a lot of other stuff that's going on with Michael and Nikita this year. They're together, but they're going to be pulled apart at some point and then hopefully brought back together too. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler because I think that's gotten out, but I would love to see if Michael and Nikita could have that at some point. It would be very intense for both of them in the sense that Nikita's never had that ever. And it would just be a total sense of family and togetherness, which she's not used to. And it'd be intense for Michael because he's had his wife and his daughter killed in front of him. So that would be something to be done very delicately. But you never know. I would not be opposed to it.
And one last question from me. I do have to ask you. I do have the hugest crush on Mandy Moore ever. She is awesome as I want to believe.
Yes, she is. She is, without a doubt. And she was, I think she was 18 when we were doing that film, or 19, something like that. And she was a baby, and she was a sweetheart. You know, I'm sure she still is. We talk rarely, but we've just had so much else going on in life, and she's obviously married now. Apparently we're somewhat neighbors now, so hopefully we can reconnect. We did a little bit over Twitter recently, but she's a great girl. I can't say enough about her and how much of a kind, sweet person she is. And she really was perfect for that character because at the time, I don't know if it is now, but she was very, you know, she's gorgeous, but she was very insecure and very uncomfortable and felt very geeky in her own way that for her to play Jamie, it really worked. It was perfect casting for that because you were able to downdress her, even though she still looked pretty in my mind. And then, you know, we're able to gloss her up when she goes, when there's that, the musical that they put on at school. Great girl. And I think she's always going to have a good head on her shoulders, for sure.
That's awesome.
And she's married to an amazing musician now, so
yeah,
that's good too.
Well, and she's married to a pretty amazing musician too, from what I hear. I did.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna say, I think Hollywood's missing the boat on not reuniting you two in a movie. I got to tell you, I think there's some money to be made there. I really do.
Well, you know, there's always, you never know, there's always something you can do where, one of these days it'd be nice to do another film with her. You know, we're one for one, batting 1,000, so we got to give it another shot.
Okay, well, Shane, what is there you want to promote? We got Nikita, I believe it's at 8 Eastern, 7 Central on Friday on CW. And what else do you got going on? Anything else that we need to know about?
No, that's it for now. That's the main focus. I'm going to have a film coming out soon, which I'll tweet about, with Mira Sorvino, called The Presence, which
awesome.
Is going to be a really cool, different type of film, one of a different role that I've never played before. which is always what I'm, which attracts me to a project. But right now, really, it's all about Nikita. We're, you know, we're going into episode 2 of the second season, and you know, it's very important to get this season on fire. And I already knowing by shooting episode 7 currently that these episodes are pretty amazing, and I can't wait till each and every one of them comes out.
Yeah, let's hope for syndication. We want you to get some residual checks.
There we go.
And I hope you come on again when that film comes out with Mira Sorvino. I'm a big fan of Mira's. I love her.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah,
all
and
right.
Shane, I really appreciate everything. You're a really cool dude. Unfortunately, you have to film in Toronto, and it's probably 40, 50 degrees, but...
Not yet. It'll be there, though.
No, it is in Chicago.
No, it's actually being a lovely fall currently, even though it's raining right now, but the weather is fine. It's just going to be gnarly in about a month.
Oh. Well, I know you got a rough day ahead of you, so I wish you the best, and you always got a fan at this show. Big fan. I love you, Shane. You're a good man.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. Thank you.
All right, and we will, of course, air this tonight for all your fans, and I love you.
You do not. Lies. You do not.
I love you. I love you.
Do you?
Yeah. But I love you, too.
Thank you, man.
Wait, is this
I
the end of Ghostbusters 2? That's kind of what it's called.
I love you, man.
I love you.
I love this town.
Why am I dripping with this goo?
You didn't get my Ernie Hudson?
No.
So Shane West, he was good. I love this town. Or did you say I love this job?
I don't know.
So I love this town or I love this job? Ghostbusters, one last line.
I love this town.
It is I love this town, right?
Oh, wait.
Because they're both New York.
I think it is I love this job.
Well, whatever. That's me.
I thought Rick Moranis was saying he loved
We don't just look alike, me and Ernie Hudson. We speak the same language.
You do.
English?
Swahili. So, any Hoosers, Shane West interview. Any comments? Any questions?
Two comments. You could tell that he really, really enjoys working on Nikita, which is, you know.
I hope so.
Yeah, no, but like, you know, sometimes people come on, they promote stuff. But like, you could tell he really likes working on the show. And it's cool to listen to somebody who really likes what they do. Like, I don't get the impression that he's in it just to become famous.
No.
I think that he really likes acting and he likes the whole dynamics and behind the scenes stuff. So it's really cool to listen to that.
He's a good actor. He was great on ER. Great on ER.
Yes.
But, you know, he's not like just some 30-year-old getting drunk partying and stuff. He sounds like he's very serious about acting and the craft and everything, which is refreshing to hear. It was a very good interview, Matthew.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Any questions, comments about Shane West or Mandy Moore?
Mandy Moore's answered my question.
Yeah, she's the answer to everyone's question.
She certainly is. No, Shane.
Yeah.
Shane West. I just love the story about going out there with the family, the bands that is, you know.
I have a feeling there's more to that.
I know.
That I'd like to know more about.
I was going
to
say, that's what I was like. I want to know more.
The guy has a long filming day. I go, 40 minutes is probably even pushing it.
Well,
but
yeah.
40 minutes with Shane West.
Yes.
That's pretty good. I will like to go a little longer. I had more questions.
Yeah.
But we'll have them again, I'm sure.
How many people?
As long as you remind my farts will go on.
How many people direct message you with questions for him?
Lots. I always get people asking questions, pretty much whoever we have on, but he was up there with one of the most.
I imagine a lot of, yeah, I was just about to say, I imagine a lot
of
emails.
Some of them smoking.
Oh,
usually.
I'm sure.
Usually that's how that works.
Well, I figure smoking hot chicks have other things to do with their time.
I get, well, maybe
no,
not.
They don't.
I just got to say, how do you feel about yourself when you find out how young he really started getting cooking into this profession?
Well,
what is going on?
I
being interrupted by music. What the fuck?
This is the zucchini theme.
Listen here, John Williams. We're going to have some problems.
When you and zucchini do the dirty... The dirty whatever.
What?
The dirty Sanchez. I like his Steve impression.
What?
It's the Matt impression with an arm movement.
Pretty much.
So anyways.
What am I, like a video game character?
No, I was just saying though. Is this what you and Zucchini screw to?
Wouldn't know.
The Imperial March?
Wouldn't know at the moment, but.
I don't think Shane West has ever screwed to the Imperial March. That's a question I could ask.
You could ask that.
Have you ever done the horizontal mambo?
Who is screwing to this song?
Nerd.
Charles, I'm leaning towards you.
Okay, you know how many... If you would have said everyone at Comic-Con, leave the room if you haven't fucked to the Imperial March, our group's the only one walking out.
That's true.
Well, that's because a lot of them probably haven't fucked.
I bet Lawrence Holmes fucks to the Imperial March. He's a fucking dork.
You think so?
Yeah.
Lawrence Holmes.
Now hold the phone here.
Lawrence.
LH, is that what you were going
to
call him?
I was about to say LWH, yeah.
Oh, yoy, yoy.
Hey, me and Holmes were cool back in the day.
Yeah, Holmes, yeah.
We used to exchange emails.
You know, I've heard very bad things from DePaul teachers about Larry Holmes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I heard he was kind of snotty and full of himself from more than one teacher, less than three.
Back when he was partners with Jay Hood.
Two?
Was that when he was with Jay Hood? Maybe.
That's when I would talk to him.
Maybe. These were two teachers that he had that had been at DePaul like 15 years, so.
I don't know. I've only met him once, and I briefly talked to him.
And one class, the teacher brought him up because it was a media class. But he went there for law school or something, too, I was told.
Yeah.
And then one was my math teacher. So that was weird.
Yeah.
She didn't bring him up, though. His name got brought up in the room somewhere, so I guess he's popular, I guess. Whatever.
I think he gets because, the DePaul magazine every year? You know, once a year they do something on, like, people.
The alumni magazine?
Yeah. They had a thing on him. They did it, because I'm a communications major, so they did a communications thing.
Ooh, yeah.
And so he was on it.
Well, Mr. Jason Ferrari will be calling in any minute from First and Long on Chicagoland Sports Radio. And we're going to talk about the Walter Payton book that's coming out on Tuesday.
Must we have the Imperial March still playing? Or...
Yeah, I know. You guys would have been done a long time ago.
Well, no, we've done it a few times by now.
By the way, it came out on Blu-ray. They have that commercial dressed up as Darth
Vader. I've
seen
that on the Volkswagen.
That just makes me gay.
Why?
Does zucchini give you Blumpkin?
Oh, this is getting
to the Imperial March.
Listen, I will not answer Blumpkin questions.
Oh, will you not? Because
no.
I think I have some footage of Steve getting a Blumpkin from Zucchini. Zucchini.
Oh!
Oh, Steve. Oh, my.
Give it to her heart, Lauren.
Ooh, let the Muppet in.
Hold
what
on, I have a phone call.
Oh, no.
Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, it's Ferrari, man.
Oh
Jason Ferrari, First and Long.
I'm so glad I called in to the Imperial March and farts.
Yeah, well.
And Blumpkin.
Well, you missed the beginning of the show where I did Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On all in farts.
Which is better than the original version.
That's what I said.
It was better. Chuck, call me.
I mean, she's quite the singer, but that's definitely like a woman I want to slap in public.
Oh, no.
I don't know this dude, but I like him.
Well, he's Italian. Of course you do.
Forget about
it. Yeah.
I'm the least Italian out there, man.
You actually are. You're not a very good Italian.
So he said.
What is the definition of good Italian?
Good Italian. He's too busy working. He can't walk the streets in his suit and slicked back, balding head. And not that I'm naming anyone we know.
Oh, yeah, I have a full head of hair, and I don't do anything fun, really, lately.
I think Jason met some of the Italians I hang out with.
Angels and Kings?
Yeah, I'm sure that was an experience, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun, man. I wish I could have partook in the discounted Johnny Walker. But it's not, on the old budget.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
So that's where it's at. Finally, I've figured it out.
Oh, shit. Whoops. I didn't know it was a secret.
Well, now I know.
Yeah, this was a huge secret. This was actually a very big secret.
Well, now that I know, Caesar, that's all that matters. But I'm not drinking, so whatever.
I
don't know if that exists anymore. I went there on a Tuesday a month ago, and I didn't see one person doing it.
What? Ooh, I don't know if I like that.
But I don't know. It could have been the crowd. I'm not sure.
That was pretty cheap.
That is a deal.
So let's talk about this. You're in the sports biz, if you will, a little.
Yeah. I'm a fake sports biz. I've been doing a football show for a little over a year now. So
yes,
close enough.
Your co-host is Brendan Greeley?
Brendan McCaffrey.
McCaffrey, thank you. Thank you. I was thinking of someone I worked with at Dahl, Brendan McCaffrey, who's at the Score, too, correct?
Correct. He's a producer at the Score.
Yeah. So I figured I'll call up Jason because all my football friends are busy. No, but Jason knows a lot about football. He does. This is the sport that, like, year-round he waits for, and this is what he knows about.
It's true.
And being a lifelong Bears fan and a huge Bears fan, I thought I want to talk about this Walter Payton book called Sweetness, The Enigmatic Life of Walter Payton by Jeff, who's a douchebag Perlman. I'll get to that, though. But I wanted to get your take on this first, because what I'm hearing, all the excerpts that are being leaked out from this book by publishers, I might add, are all about Walter Payton supposedly being suicidal, drug addict, cheating on his wife.
Connie Payton has admitted that she did talk to him about suicide.
Yes. I'm going to get to this.
Right.
I'm going to get to this. But my opinion on this whole thing, I'm going to let Jason give his opinion first, but my opinion on this whole thing isn't so much about what's in the book. It's the fact that the book's being made, period. But Jason, what's your take on this?
All right, man. Well, I mean, keep in mind, I have multiple biases. You've listed a few of them. Lifetime, football fan, Bears fan. Obviously, Walter Payton is, I don't know, I'll clarify this. He is my favorite NFL player of all time. I've worked with his kid for a year. So, there's some biases there, but I'm going to do my best to kind of separate those a bit because, I mean, look at the professional athletes that we've seen in all of our lifetimes. I mean, and just imagine how many of them have significant skeletons in the closet, if you will. I mean, there's probably some stuff that we will never know about that we don't want to know about, because it tends to change people's opinions, which is unfortunate. In this particular guy's instance, I mean, obviously, all we've heard really, because I don't think anyone, on the show right now is doing investigative reporting on the dirty secrets of Walter Payton, because why would you?
Right.
There are much bigger assholes out there to crucify, believe me. And, I don't want to say we've been fed, but all we've ever heard is, how much of a philanthropist he was, how good he is with his family. How great a football player and team player he was and how great he was with his friends. And those things are all true. And some of these things that are being released, and you're absolutely right. The excerpts that were released to SI and the publishers are pushing out are going to be the most incriminating ones because controversy sells books.
This is why people are going to buy the book. This is why people are going to buy the book, for the 20 pages of trash that's in the book. And I understand Jeff Perlman saying, well, that's not the whole book. There's a lot of great stuff about Walter in the book. But you've got 20 pages of trash, and that's what you're selling the book off of. But you know what? I thought about this today long and hard. Good luck, Jeff Perlman, because you know where that book needs to sell in order to make money? Chicago.
Chicago.
And you know who's not going to fucking buy it because of all the trash in that fucking book? Chicagoans. So, because you said it. You said it, Jason. It's shitting on he's a saint in this town. Walter Payton is a saint in this town. No, and people already know what he did behind the scenes and him and Connie's falling out at one point. And this is all documented, and Connie's even talked about it. But the guy's a fucking saint, and nobody in Chicago wants to hear anything about, this kind of crap. I'll give you an excerpt. Here's one. Walter would call me all the time saying he was about to kill himself. He was tired, Payton's longtime agent Bud Holmes said. He was angry. Nobody loved him. He wanted to be dead. First of all, Bud Holmes, you got paid how much money through representing Walter Payton in your lifetime? You're a fucking jagoff. The guy fucking dies. You don't see anyone writing books about Michael Jordan right now and his gambling problem and cheating on his wife all the time, which, by the way, I don't think I'm alleging too much.
I think that's pretty well said.
But people don't write it because he's alive. You're shitting on a dead man's grave here. This is what
I'll
this is.
I'll tell you what.
This is garbage.
I was thinking about that part of it today, too. And, I mean, I know what this guy is. This is what, this Perlman guy, this is kind of what he does. He's a writer. He takes his time and he investigates, and, you know, he's right in one aspect where I saw a quote of him saying, what do we know about this guy? But, you know, you're right in saying that who the hell, at least in this town, wants to really hear this stuff. But, I mean, it's been 12 years now. It'll be 12 years in November that he passed. I mean, I think that's not just a coincidence. If he would have wrote a book like this, or an article like this, or a paragraph like this, near the time that he died, this guy would have been lynched. He would
outlawed.
Have death threats
outlawed.
More than now.
He would be blacklisted from anywhere. Any publisher wouldn't touch him with a 1,000-foot pole. Just wouldn't
not
happen.
To mention, I mean, yeah, credibility, everything. What athlete in their right mind want to say a word to this person when they crucify? This guy is going after one of the best, just pure athletes, period. In sport, so, you know,
let me bring up, though, too, this is the same author who wrote the biography of John Rocker, scumbag, loser, ass fucker, John Rocker, and then, how about Love Me, Hate Me, which was the unauthorized Barry Bonds autobiography that he wrote. So I understand what Jeff Perlman does here. I understand that he goes out and, look, here's another excerpt. Here's another friggin' excerpt that just pisses me off. Okay, where is it? Peyton's executive assistant, Ginny Quirk.
Oh, Ginny, yeah.
He would call and say, you won't see me when you get to the office tomorrow. Enjoy life without me. Listen, first of all, how much money did he pay his fucking executive assistant? And now she's going to shit on him? If these excerpts are just excerpts and we're reading this out of context, like Dan Patrick has suggested this morning and some other people have suggested, these are still the excerpts that the publisher is putting out. And based off of Jeff Perlman's track record of doing the John Rocker autobiography and Barry Bonds' unauthorized autobiography all about steroids, I have a feeling. And by the way, he also did Boys Will Be Boys about the 90s Dallas Cowboys, which had very incriminating stories about the Dallas Cowboys and drugs and partying as well.
Right,
this guy likes to sell books based off controversy. Like you said, the three C's, controversy creates cash. But look, I mean, come on, man. Dude, shitting on Walter Payton. I don't know. That's low. It's low. Look, the other guys were at least alive to defend themselves. Barry Bonds,
and realistically, they can't defend themselves, and they are alive. I mean, they did everything he said.
Right, because his fourth book, his book before this, was Roger Clemens' biography, an unauthorized biography called "The Rocket That Fell to Earth." Boy, that sounds like a real positive Roger Clemens story.
You know, I'm curious, and I don't know that this may happen, you know, maybe among sports writers or athletes, or it'll be an unofficial thing, but say, for example, you read this book, or you just hear about these excerpts, I'd be real curious to see whose opinion is changed in the least. I mean, I don't really think that people are going to care because... None of us who hear about this or read this, you know, take the athletes out of the equation, know what it's like to A, be in a key spotlight, let alone be one of the best players to ever put on a fleet and to be a record breaker.
Hold on, Jason, I'm getting a little feedback. Can you call me back?
I can.
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to go with Chuck anyways for his opinion. Call me back.
All right.
Chuck. What are your thoughts on this? Because you're a huge Bears fan. You're a sports guy. You had your own sports radio show you worked on the last year with a bunch of other guys. But so what's your opinion on all this?
The part of the excerpts is that he was addicted to painkillers. Now, you have to think about this is a guy that played 14 years. He missed
not just painkillers, though. They brought up other things, too. Like he puts nitrogen tanks in his fucking garage.
Yeah, which, I mean... And I heard an interview with his wife, and she said, you know, she was in the garage. She never saw anything like that. But, I mean, really, if you look at the painkiller stuff, he missed one game in his 14-year career in his rookie season. That guy's training methods were unbelievable. Of course he used painkillers. Who didn't back then?
What's the point about telling the stories, though? Oh, yeah. Football players from the 70s and 80s using painkillers, big shocker,
yeah.
Right.
Abusing them, probably.
But, Chuck, how about, what's what's the point of telling the story about Walter Payton's mistress and Connie and their relationship? Who cares?
Yeah, I know. You know,
I only care about who you're having sex with, Chuck, not Walter Payton.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Yeah, you know, the author says he went out to create a book and a story and interview all these people, and this is what came up. And, I mean, I understand, you know, if you put yourself in the author's point and, you know, you just want to do a story on Walter Payton and you interview people and this keeps bringing up, and it's like, well, do you put it in the book? Do you put it out? But, I mean, you kind of got to look at it from the other side, too, but... You know, I mean, we don't need to know this stuff. I mean, you know, are professional athletes the most perfect people in the world? No. Should you look to them for, you know, moral guidance? No.
Well, that's the funnier thing. How many athletes have cheated on their wives or had falling out with their wives?
All of
them. Did you know, I saw a report on HBO Real Sports, the Brian Gumbel show, and they did, this was when I was in San Diego on a trip, and I was just laying in bed, and they talked about the divorce rate in the NFL is like 80%.
Yeah.
It's 50 in the world, in the United States. It's 80 in the NFL.
You think about what these people do to their bodies week in and week out, and they've been doing it since they were 7, 8 years old. You know, of course they're going to get addicted to painkillers and stuff like that, and of course it's going to lead to problems in a marriage.
I'm just saying,
people are going to fight.
I understand why Dan Patrick's having him on his show Tuesday. You want to get his point of view. I wouldn't be shocked if Boers and Bernstein have him on. I don't know if he'll do Boers and Bernstein because I don't think it would be pleasant.
I know. My buddy Roper refused him.
Roper refused him? I was going to say Dick Roper, probably not Rocone.
Rocone. Yeah, he refused them to come on. He said he didn't want to hear what he had to say.
Yeah, well, Dan Patrick says, I want to hear what everyone has to say, which is horseshit, but whatever.
Yeah,
once again, remember the fucking source.
Yeah, you know, I mean, his track
record. I gave you his track record.
You kind of got a question. Like, you know, you got a question. What's your motivation here? Like, why?
And I haven't been listening to sports radio today, but I've been watching ESPN all day, and I've heard no one mention the guy's track record.
Everybody.
Dan Patrick didn't mention his track record. No one wanted to mention that this guy does this anyways.
Locally here in Chicago, I haven't heard anybody mention his track record. A lot of people are upset. A lot of people are questioning, why would you do this? And, I mean, there better be stuff in there about all the charitable work he did that his wife and children continue to do.
And his kids are amazing.
Yeah.
They're great human beings.
Yeah.
They're the nicest people you'll ever meet.
His son works for the Score.
Just the nicest
kid. And his daughter, I think, is featured on that Chicago
His son was not the best football player ever. But all you ever hear about his son was he was the first one to show up to work out and do and train, and he was the last one to leave, and he's one of the nicest kids you'll ever meet. And that's why football teams even kept him around.
Yeah.
Because he was a positive influence in a fucking locker room.
Everybody.
And that doesn't come from bad parenting.
Everybody in this city knows the Paytons, whether it be Connie, his son, or his daughter, and no one has ever said anything bad about any of them.
So, Jason, have you heard anything else? Because, you know, you're in radio, so any of your radio friends or anyone you've talked to about this, has anyone brought it up? Has it been bullshitted around?
My phone, is it feedback still? It can't be my phone. I don't know.
Are you in front of the computer?
No, I'll walk outside my door.
Still feedback? Yeah, it's bad.
I don't know what it is.
Are you using a rotary phone?
No. I haven't had a landline in about 10 years.
Oh, is this a landline?
No, I don't have a landline. It's on myself.
Shit. Where do you live? MLK in 97?
Yeah.
That's usually not our best area. 92nd? Is it bad, Caesar? No? Wait, Caesar's saying it may be okay now? Still going? call back.
I want to talk to you.
I don't know.
I know. I have something to say, damn it. I'll try back.
I don't know. He's going to try back. Because I want to give Jason the last word.
Yeah.
I mean, and I want to hear what people are talking
about.
I'm
not going to read it. I don't really care what he has
to say. It's not on your Kindle?
No.
I
got too many books that I'm trying to read right now.
Yeah, and we still have other stuff to get to, too. I want to talk about this Bill Simmons crap. I want Jason to be able to stay on. Jason Ferrari, though, if you don't, you should listen to his song, his show, First and Long. It's on Chicagoland Sports Radio. You know, the www?
The www.
Yeah.
The guys who are on the radio with used to hate when people would say that.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, everybody knows it's WWW.
Tri-dubs.
So Roe said no, huh?
Roe said
no. What did Richard say?
Richard said that's fine.
Yeah, Richard don't care.
No, but Roe said I'm not talking to this guy.
I mean, I don't know.
I thought about it today.
I would probably have him on.
I almost had Pat call his publisher. But then I'm like, you know what? I don't want to give this guy the added publicity. That's what I thought about. I'm like, I'm going to talk about it tonight, and then I'm going to ban talking about this. I don't want to give this guy any more publicity. So I thought about it, though. I go, well, I'll have Pat call up his publicist. I'll hear his point of view. And then I went through the guy's track record, and I went through some of the chapters of his older books. And I go, this guy's just a tabloid reporter that puts out books.
I met Walter Payton once.
Yeah.
Maybe when I was 10.
Well, that's
maybe.
When he was pretty sick still.
Yeah, no.
No, okay. He didn't get sick yet. 93?
Yeah, so I was probably a little younger. And I don't remember where it was. It was in some school, and there were like a couple hundred people in there in line for an autograph, and he signed every single one of them.
His teammates don't have a bad word to say about him. And Singletary, Ditka, and I want to say Butkus said they doubt this whole thing. They doubt half the shit that's been said.
If anybody was going to have a problem with him, it probably would have been Hampton because he's the most... I mean, if anybody...
Did you hear he's not going to the White House to pay his respects with
okay,
the 85
you know
Bears?
Who cares? A lot of people don't go to the White
no,
House.
No, it's polite and respectful.
A lot
he
of people
is,
don't go to the White
he
House.
He is not just the people that voted for him's president. He's our president of our United States.
I get it, but who cares?
If you don't like the guy, be fucking polite and just go. And shut your fucking mouth, and then go home.
I don't see what the big deal is.
I see
lot.
What the big
I
deal is,
because
Dan Hampton's always been an ass clown.
Well,
this is the same
yeah.
guy that said, I hope the Bears hit New Orleans like Katrina. I believe
what?
That's the exact quote.
No.
Oh, but there was no media
no.
getting mad at him about it or
no,
anything.
There was.
Did they?
Yeah, they
did he get in trouble?
He got yelled at. He had to apologize. And I, you know.
Yellow, who's is this Jason again?
Yeah, I tried from another phone. Is it working?
I don't know. Caesar's going to let me know. Is it working?
Hello?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Caesar
we got
says
up.
We're good now because I was going to pause and wait by doing that.
Well, I was going to say, I wonder if this asylum could say if we're okay.
Okay, go ahead, Jason. Go ahead.
No. All right, what was your question that. Was, have people in radio been talking about
have
it?
Have you and your friends been talking about it? What's the word on the street?
Yeah, man, my phone's been blown up. I actually texted Jared earlier today just to see, like, hey, man, how are you? Because I'm sure he said he almost wants to shut his phone off at some point, but everything's been positive, which doesn't surprise me based on, you know, what you guys are talking about. That family's just the
wow,
shit,
Jared's
no,
being a positive guy about it. What a shock.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good people.
But, you know, I work for a bunch of different places, and I saw an email, WGN is one of them, and I saw an email going around the publicist, of obviously, for this guy. Of course, he emailed WGN. I don't know if anyone's having him on or not, but a friend of mine who's a producer over there sent it to me, and she asked what I thought about it. I'm like, I think you know what I think about it. I don't want to hear this moron, but...
No, I have a feeling if he is on a Chicago TV show, because there's a moron like Dave Kaplan that'll take him. There's an idiot like Kaplan that'll
Chicago
fucking
tonight.
Take him. Yeah, and I guarantee you people will shut off their TVs. They'll shut them off.
It's hard not to be biased about it, right? I mean, think about all you know about the person, and you're right. He's not allowed to defend himself, and he did so much good. Like, everything he did was good for the most part, you know? And like I said, the guy popped some painkillers. Jesus, I mean, he took a beating and played on some of the worst, not just the worst Bears teams, some of the worst teams in football for years.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, he's beyond a saint. And in this town, you're right, that's who you need to be on your side and to buy this book. And I don't see that happening, or even close.
Well, and I got two other points about it is, and then we're going to move on to the Bill Simmons article today that made me.
Yeah, I saw your comments. I agree.
Yeah. But Chuck, brought it up. The Walter Payton and Connie Payton Foundation has raised how much money? Do you think they talk about that in the book?
Oh, by the way, the NFL's Man of the Year Award, named after Walter
Payton.
And
here's the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
This guy is a hero and an idol to people that grew up in this time period. And who knows? Who knows if enough goodwill is spread about Walter Payton, other kids who want to be football players or play football or whatever are going to ask about Walter, and they just want to hear good things. It's good to have positive fucking role models and not shit all over them when they're dead. I think it's pretty fucking shitty.
Yeah, they should shit on Michael Jordan now.
He's
a douche.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you ask Jeff Pearlman to grow a set of fucking balls and go write the book about Michael Jordan and about the rumors of him being kicked out of basketball, not because of his dad dying, but because of gambling. Or go ask Michael Jordan about all the women he slept with outside of his ex-wife.
Rush Street.
Yeah, go ask Michael Jordan about what he does at Jilly's on a Saturday night, or doesn't do with Jilly's because he's not allowed.
I know a couple
allowed.
People like it, I'll tell you that.
You know, one thing that surprises me and that piques my curiosity is this is a 450-page book.
Yeah.
And I think we're all going to be shocked, because we don't know yet, to find out who all these people are that are his sources. I think some of these are going to be sources that we don't like.
When one's his agent and one's his executive assistant,
right.
I'm waiting to hear other things. But when you were off the phone, we were talking, and Ditka and Singletary and a bunch of guys have come out and said, not around us, he was never like this. It's horseshit. Walter was always asking, how you doing? He'd take you to the corner and talk to you for an hour and make sure life's going well. And he was just the friendliest guy, according to them. And what really bothers me is, according to reports I'm reading from people who read this book, even the good stuff they talk about in this book is clouded with him hating it. He supposedly hated his life even through the good stuff.
Okay.
According
I was just about
to
say, because they don't say when the suicide thoughts came in. If that came in,
I'm sure they're all post-football.
I'll give you a quote. Even seemingly great times in Peyton's life was filled with confusion. That is a quote.
Yeah, confusion, because the Bears sucked and he didn't know if he wanted to get traded or not.
All right. So let's move on to last night. We rarely talk about sports on here, but since Jason's on and Chuck's here, and, you know, I love a little Bill Simmons bashing. And actually,
yeah.
I want to call my buddy Gordo, too, because he had something very good to say about this that I thought was, if you don't read Bill Simmons, do you, Chuck?
Once in a while. I didn't today.
Well, Bill Simmons has become, in my mind, what made him famous to begin with. He would always reference famous things in pop culture that ended up being really cheesy and dorky 10 years later. That's Bill Simmons. He was great at one point, and now he's just become just this pale, like, I don't know, he's bad. He's bad. But let's
he went from a sports writer to Perez Hilton.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what happened. See if Gordon answers. I wish.
Gordon Bombay.
Gordon Bombay.
Gordon.
I want it. Bombay.
The Flying V. Yeah.
I hope he answers. Triple D.
Right. Yeah.
Listen, Goldberg.
If Gordo doesn't answer, I'm calling Emilio Estevez.
I'm sure he has time.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
That's kind of true. All right, I'm going to just talk about this article. If Gordo calls, he's fucked. I'm not going to even look at the board in a minute. Okay, so basically this article chronicles from 4 p.m. last night to 9 p.m. But I mean, he chronicles like every 2 minutes. And it's about basically how watching the Red Sox lose was once again, geez, that's just being a Red Sox fan. We've gone through so much futility. And Gordo had a great line, since he's not calling in, I'll use it, where he said, yeah, they're babies, haven't seen them win a World Series yet. Poor guys. And so this is basically, this may be a 5,000-word article about how sad it is to see the Boston Red Sox lose last night. Like they haven't won two championships in the last, what, 6 years? 7 years? Okay. So, you're a Cubs fan, Chuck. What was your comment as well before the show about this?
That he doesn't know what pain and torture is life, because for 100 years we have been fucked up the butt by a goat, by Steve Bartman, by Leon Durham, by everybody else, and just rammed hard for 102 years. And I, you know, it's awful being a Cubs fan. It really is. I think we're all secretly masochists. We just love to be hated. But no, yeah, he has no idea what he's talking about. Cubs fans have it much worse, and it's kind of our own fault.
It's typical Boston fan crap. Boston fans are the fucking worst.
Yeah, they are the worst. Yeah. You're right.
And woe is me. They haven't won the World Series in 3 years.
By the way, it wouldn't be a Bill Simmons article without celebrity name dropping. He bumped into Amy Madigan at a grocery store, and he had to talk about how they were small talking. And then, of course, it wouldn't be a Bill Simmons article without him dropping Bill James in Melrose Place a few times. So, you know, I'm just getting a little tired of Bill. I don't think he has much left to say. He's one of those. I have this theory about writers. Writers do their best work when they're piss fucking poor, because America's piss fucking poor, and that's what they can relate to. They can relate to a guy who's on the same level as them. Then Bill Simmons gets fucking filthy rich, like a lot of writers. This is why shows, I think, progressively get worse over seasons and seasons and seasons, because those writers get loaded and they kind of slack off a little, and they don't have real people problems anymore, and they don't have real people things to talk about anymore. And I think Bill Simmons has just become this like really rich guy who is still making references from the 90s because he doesn't have time to watch anything from 2 weeks ago. He's just too rich and busy. That's what he's become, my opinion.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
It doesn't take 5,000 words to sum up the bullshit that he tried to sell today.
I know. I can't even believe this. I can't even believe how
5,000 words, that's just asinine.
I'm like, sum it
up very simply. Your pitching sucked.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, he made an airplane reference from 1980. So he's actually going back in time.
Does he know Leslie Nielsen died a couple months ago?
Yo, he probably doesn't. He probably doesn't. Must be nice.
God, I hope he wears paper jeans and Z Cabarici.
Oh, wait. I think Gordo's calling. Hello.
Hey.
Gordo?
Yes. I'm here.
You got anything? Did you, even though I warned you not to read the Bill Simmons article, did you read it?
I read a little bit.
Oh, why'd you stop reading, Gordo?
I don't want to read about him and his friend watching a game. It didn't really do it for me.
So, Gordo, what do you got to say about these Boston Red Sox fans that are crying futility after, I think it's been like 3 years since they won a World Series? Or,
well, when you're going to trade for Bruce Chen to pitch the wild card playoff, which would have been today, I think that's not a good sign.
You're saying you're a little desperate when you're trading for Bruce Chen on the last day of the season?
Yeah, I was reading that was the goal for today. They were going to trade for him from Kansas City.
Jason, we're not wrong. They had no shot in the playoffs anyways, right? Tampa Bay has way more of a shot than the Red Sox did.
Oh, agreed. I mean, look, I think the choke over the last month just proves it.
Gordo, it's Chuck. Aren't Cubs fans have it much worse?
Yeah, I think so. Well, they've been horribly run for a century, and the Red Sox have been pretty fucking good the past, I don't know, 15 years. So I'm not understanding this whining and the self-loathing. It's just, it doesn't add up. It's getting really old, I think.
Yeah. Besides, you got the New England Patriots, so blow me.
Jason, you're a Cubs fan, right? You're a Cubs fan too, right?
To be honest with you, I don't really like baseball that much. It's torturous.
You're out of
to me.
The baseball biz. You just hate Red Sox fans. Just by
proxy. Well, I mean, no, but not just them. All of them.
Celtic.
I mean, they have many other sports out there. They all suck.
The Bruins also just won the Stanley Cup, so double blow me, Boston.
Yeah.
Well,
they have someone win every year.
Assholes.
They win a sport every year, and they just cry and cry and cry. Shut the fuck up.
I agree.
The Bruins won last year. The year before, was the Celtics. The year before that, I think they made it to the Super Bowl. They didn't win. It was like shocking.
Yeah, the Giants.
Yeah, it was shocking.
Dude, I had a party after the Super Bowl party because they lost. I partied till like 6 a.m.
Yeah,
we got another
keg. Did you have clam chowder?
No, I made 5 gallons of chili, though.
You know what? Boston's only created one good thing ever. Cheers.
Cream pie. Boston cream pie is good.
Why, you're such a fatty.
Look, you got man boobs. I lost mine.
What about the Wahlbergs?
These are pecs. Oh, the Wahlbergs.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's a pretty good one.
Only
Johnny?
Departed.
No,
I did
Johnny?
Departed. I did love
For my money, there's nothing better than the Funky Bunch.
The Funky Bunch.
Although I was happy Boston won because I hate the Canucks, so I was rooting for Boston.
Oh, yeah. You were rooting for Boston?
Over the Canucks, yes.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
There you go.
Yeah.
You see it, baby?
Yeah, this is what Boston can be proud of. Good vibration.
And the new kids on the block, too.
And the new kids on the block, yeah.
Can you turn this up? I'm going to bench press some cinder blocks.
You're going to bench press to this?
Wow.
Well, don't you remember in the video he had cinder blocks on a stick?
Yes.
Because that works.
Gordo just mentioned everything on Matt's iPod.
Hey, on Gordo's iPod, too, if you don't recall.
Yeah. I do recall. Yeah. Car ride of my life. You
Why was it the worst car ride of your life?
Driving back
car
from
ride.
Cleveland, listening to nothing but Nick Lachey and Ashley Simpson
and Sync.
And Sync.
Yeah.
NSYNC.
Even worse. You two.
Black, white, red, brown, Field of Vibrations.
By the way, we're going to go into overtime. We got 5 minutes left on regular time here. Brett Cullen, who you may remember from The Replacements. And he's in the new movie Puncture with it's him and Chris Evans. And he was on Point of Interest tonight, actually, too. He's on the show Monday, so people know.
That's a good show.
Brett Cullen. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, you should be. I'm excited.
He played the dickhead coach in The Replacement.
I know who he played.
You remember? He was Gene Hackman's foil.
He was Gene Hackman's foil. This is great. I can't wait for that. That's great.
So that'll be fun.
That was news to me. I didn't know he was going to be on.
That'll be fun. Yeah.
That will be fun.
And he's going to be in The Dark Knight Rises, which I have to...
Monday.
I have to quiz him about.
You will have to quiz. As much as you can quiz.
Yeah.
You had other Dark Knight...
Well, every Dark Knight...
No one is saying
everyone.
Anything.
I've had on people that are in The Dark Knight Rises, and they get sent like 2 pages of a script.
Supposedly no one knows the ending except for the 3 writers.
I don't doubt it.
I don't either.
I heard it's really very shut down.
Everyone's blabbermouths. Can you blame them? Everyone blabs.
Well, those are pictures they release.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Not all of them. There's one
well,
of Anne Hathaway
when you,
that just
Except
came
when
out.
You film on the street, what are you going to do?
You're going to close...
You can't
yeah.
shut Pittsburgh down
due
to popular belief.
Biodome. You can close it down.
Biodome. Calm down, Baldwin.
No! Okay.
Oh, wait. Didn't Boston give us the Baldwin?
Yes.
Or no, that's New York,
no,
right?
I don't remember.
I think Julianne Moore is Boston, though.
I know a
I
few of the
New York.
Remember, you know why Julianne Moore is so great?
What?
And if anyone disagrees with me, I'm going to have to argue with them. But it's only because he saw her pussy in Shortcuts and Big Lebowski.
Of course.
That's all people really care about. And then they say she's a great actress because of it. They're like, she's so great.
Or is her pussy so great? Is that?
That's what I think.
Well, I agree.
My opinion.
I'd sample. I don't know.
Yeah, I would too.
Well, no, but my point is then people call her
a pink appetizer.
People call her a great actress.
Under false
But
pretenses.
I think it's because they just really
her
like her.
Her accent was terrible.
That's
in
what I'm
Hannibal.
Saying. And it's terrible in 30 Rock, too. And that's what I'm saying. I think she's a decent actress, but I'm thinking mostly people just care about her fire crotch.
I know.
Well, I think a lot of people get further in life due to their willingness to be naked a lot.
Yeah. Well, not me, unfortunately. I get less
for
you
know,
in
I was
life.
Referring to some actresses who gained popularity. I'm not thinking of you naked.
Oh, well, or Harvey Keitel. He didn't go further. I was going to say, Julianne Moore, though, I don't think her and I are doing any movies together now anytime soon. She may not be my biggest fan.
Probably not.
Yeah, hope her publicist is listening. I meant it in a good way.
Right.
Bad.
Anytime you have to say you meant it in a good way, it's not good.
By the way, can we talk about this Bank of America thing?
Yes, please. Let us.
Oh, the $5 thing?
Yeah, did you see they're going to charge $5 for you to use your debit card a month?
Well, how many people did they just let go of? 40,000?
Yeah, they let go of 40. Skank of America. yeah. let go of 40,000 people. I think that's the exact number, actually.
More fees to come.
Why is it always a round number, by the way, when people when there's a big firing spree? It's always like 40,000. It's never like 322.
Well, I don't know if – I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, when you put out a press release, you don't say Bank of America Day let go of 41,247 employees. You know, it's nice and simple, 40,000 plus.
Yeah, but you better round down then.
I know 226, and he does not deserve to get let go.
I just believe of it, that's all.
I bet you sooner or later most banks start doing that.
Well, I'm going to be most pissed if that happens.
Oh, no, I would too, but I'm just saying sooner
or later. Do you want to hear the article? Do you want to hear this, Bank of America?
Going back to the mattress fund. What if you go local? What happens if you just do a local bank, like a credit union?
The community ones
and the credit unions are pretty solid. They're not losing money.
No, Gordo, just to use your credit card, here's the deal. Bank of America will charge customers – we're going into overtime, by the way. Bank of America will charge customers $5 per month to use their debit card starting in early 2012.
Overtime.
Sorry, we're way over. No, it's over.
Overtime.
The fee will apply to customers who use
their
debit
card. Go to the website for overtime.
We're already in overtime. The fee will apply to customers who use their debit card to make any purchases during the month, but won't apply to those who only use it for ATM transactions. So, there you go.
So that's everyone. Great.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, everybody.
Well, you know what? If you're buying something under $5, you shouldn't be using your stupid ATM card anyways. You're holding
no,
up the line.
No, but it's even to, like, withdraw cash. No.
No, no. To withdraw cash, they're not charging you.
I
if you go
were.
To the ATM to withdraw cash, they're
oh,
not.
I
it's only
that.
If you're
but
at
everyone
store.
Uses their debit card.
Yeah, and you should.
Yeah.
You don't need to do
I
it
don't.
To buy a
no.
hamburger.
Well, bag. If you go to Nick and Vito's, you don't use your debit card.
Vito and Nick's? Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Vito
cash
and
only. Cash only.
Wait a second. The gazebo, I said to you, well, what about going to the ATM? You told me no. You
I thought it was ATM. I'm reading this now, and
it's
I'm
not ATM.
You told me I was
here's
wrong.
The part I read.
Okay.
Here's the part I read. J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yeah.
Chase Bank.
Right.
Tested charging $5 ATM fee.
I remember that, yeah.
Now, this is for the ATM. I got confused.
Oh.
So, but she stopped doing it.
I know.
There was such outrage.
Right.
So I'm thinking this Bank of America thing won't last.
Well, yeah, Bank of America, if you use your debit card, you get charged $5 a month.
Yeah, and I've seen, Steve, you use your debit card. You run out of green every now and then.
Sparingly, but yes.
You've used it.
Yeah.
Just that one Burger King trip where you spent $3?
Yeah.
Add another $5 on it. That was an $8 Burger King trip.
Yeah, there you go. It was. $8.
Not on my watch. No, it didn't happen then.
If that's your only time you used it, I'm saying,
oh,
even
yes.
if you used it once, emergency
right.
time,
right.
$5.
Right. But most times I just go to the ATM.
Well, you better not get stuck anywhere where you have to use your card.
Yes, that's true.
Because there's $5.
That's $5. That's bullshit right there.
Look, by the way, it's not like Bank of America ATMs are just lying around.
No, they're not.
You got to drive out of your way and probably spend $5 in gas to do it anyway.
That's true. Thankfully,
they say that they're everywhere. I never see them.
I know. Jason, I'm with you. I've seen two, and they're both in the Bank of America banks downtown.
Yeah, I have Harris, and they're hard to find, too.
Oh, you're lucky you got one down the block from your house.
I
that's
do.
It.
That's why
but that's the only
there.
One. But yeah. that's the only one.
And there's one, luckily, that's a block from where I work. Okay. And then, luckily for me, the United Center is Harris.
Well, in L.A., Chase is a big deal.
I got Chase.
And Skank of America. And Citibank's pretty popular out there, too, yeah.
Well, then.
And Skank of America, Skank. Though.
They're the skankiest of all.
Well, for your and I's sake, let's hope Chase doesn't go back into testing the $5 fee, $10 fee they
Let me
want.
Tell you.
TCF,
yeah.
TCF, if you don't have $400 in your savings account or checking account, they charge you $10 a month.
What?
That bank is a turd.
Where do they get off doing that?
A lot of banks used to do that. Yeah.
Where do they get off doing that? Okay, listen, can someone explain this to me? I thought banks were supposed to, like, hold money for you and finance things. Where do they get off doing this bullshit?
I don't know. I'm reading something right now that's outraging me, though, that's in Chicago.
Well, you'll have to be more specific.
Illinois Catholic Conference launches Defense of Marriage Department.
What?
Here we go.
Do we have another 2.5 hours
Dude,
on
no
that
one
topic?
Could just leave the gays alone.
No.
This week, a judge once again shot down an appeal by Catholic Charities, which wants to continue handling adoptions and foster care applications in Illinois while refusing to place children with same-sex or unmarried couples. The state decided to end its contract with the charity, and now Catholics are fighting back against the gay agenda in Illinois. As the Windy City Times reported Wednesday, the Catholic Conference of Illinois recently announced the formation of a Defense of Marriage Department, which will fight any attempts to legalize same-sex marriage in the state and work to protect the stature of the nuclear family. Well, congratulations, Chicago. Let's go backwards in time.
Yeah.
This will be good. Let's not catch up with New York. No, wouldn't want to do that. New York was so far behind. That just shows how far behind we are of New York.
Kind of sad, to be honest.
So now they're going.
Well, that actually supports a conversation I had earlier today. I don't personally listen to WIND, but you know how they're sponsoring that stupid Tea Party thing.
Yes.
That's coming up, and there's a lot of people. Like if you look at the blogs and stuff, who are saying that there's why would they be doing that in Chicago? There's not an audience for that in Chicago. Well,
I'll tell you what, John Steinman.
I think you're wrong.
Yeah, I think they're wrong, too. I think there are a lot of Republicans in Tea Party. Look, I can't believe this, actually. Chuck, remember the elections of last year? Republicans were doing very well. Very well in Illinois.
Surprisingly.
You
know what the problem is with the last one? The last one here in Chicago when you voted for your mayor is that the turnout was so low because everybody was like, Emmanuel's going to win. But all the people...
Well, that and who else were you going to vote for?
Well, that's the thing.
Like Owsley?
No, I hope not.
No.
But, you know, that's the thing. It's like, well, you know, if everybody that says that doesn't vote, if all of you were to go and vote, then the person you don't want to win would not win.
If I can live in a country where Nancy Grace's tit slips out on national TV, then I want to live in a country with gay marriage, okay? If I got to deal with Nancy Grace's tit.
Are you saying that after seeing Nancy Grace's
penis? I'm thinking of going the other way now.
Yeah.
Of course, if Nancy Grace's penis slipped out, I'd go back.
Yes. Well, that's protocol right there.
So that's the deal.
Oh, by the way, does that mean Nancy Grace thinks she's up there with Janet Jackson?
Oh, God, I hope not.
I kind of think that's calculated, because after the Janet Jackson thing, I mean, I would think that they would really outlaw or eliminate the slip. I would think they would plan to eliminate the nip slip.
I just can't.
Nancy Grace's putrid, hairy nipple.
Actually, I was watching Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
This is a true story.
Yeah.
I walked in the house.
Right.
And all I saw was the backside. So I'm like, is that Nancy Grace? And she goes, that's Chaz.
What?
Yeah.
I was about to ask.
And then I saw it. It lasted like 2 seconds. It wasn't that bad, but.
Was it?
Well, no, it's not that bad until you're forced to suffer through the stills for a month.
Yeah, the stills, or if you had to suffer through Whitney.
I can still see it when I close my eyes.
Man, I'd call. I knew that show was going to be dog shit.
I would hope everyone thought so. Herb Lawrence was busting my balls last week. Herb's like, hey, your show Whitney's on. I'm like, shut the fuck up. You know it's going to be awful. You know his black ass ain't watching Whitney.
No.
Yeah, Whitney Houston, that's what I said to him. Chuck.
Little Bobby Brown, little crack.
Now, Chuck, you actually watched Whitney.
Yes.
And so did I, sadly, but I waited for the 7-day rating period to end. I didn't want to contribute. Gordo, did you watch Whitney?
No, I missed it.
You missed it. Yeah. Chuck, what was your review of this piece of shit?
I laughed twice.
Oh, I thought you said it was going to be funny. You
were
like
the funny parts you asked?
I like some of her stand up, yeah.
Sam Simon agrees with me. She looks like a transvestite.
I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, come on. That's because you say she's hot all the time.
Only I say that to aggravate you. But I do find her attractive.
She's got a bigger dick than you, Chuck.
She's attractive.
Is she?
I'll tell you what, though. It's people seem to overlook semi ugliness when people are funny. I don't think you would walk into a bar and be like, that chick is smoking, but she fucking roasts somebody and it's hilarious, and then she's kind of hot. But she looks like she needs to eat, and she has like a dolphin forehead.
When she gets dressed up,
she does need to eat.
She looks good. She probably does need to eat. She probably needs to add a few pounds. But, like, I watched her stand-up special on Comedy Central, and there were some parts of it that I thought were pretty funny.
Oh, I think Gordo will like this. NBA guard lands job with new furniture company.
Yeah, Delonte.
Delonte West to Regency Furniture.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy.
So what did Regency Furniture trade away with? Who did they trade? Who did they trade?
Not much.
I was gonna say
not much.
So
Gordo, is the lockout going to be this bad that players are going to be working at furniture stores?
Supposedly tomorrow, Stern's going to issue an ultimatum.
He's going to threaten to cancel the season.
If things don't go well, which the owner's got the players by the balls, so it's got to end soon.
You know what?
If
I'm hockey and there's no basketball season, I play every game on free TV. I fucking give giveaways at every fucking game. Giveaways all the time. Yeah,
Versus is going to change to the. They're going to change in a couple weeks.
If I'm hockey, Sports Network. Yeah, well, for 1 year, if I'm hockey, I lower ticket prices ridiculously. I lose money this year because the money you will make in the future off of gaining new fans from basketball will be huge.
Yeah, I mean, if I were them and the NBA season is canceled, you put. Starting when football's over, or even when college football's over, on Saturdays, and then when football's over, you put them games on NBC, and you get your ratings up.
What would you do, Jason, if you were hockey and the basketball season's locked out?
Oh, man, I'd be salivating. I'd actually be doing the same thing that the NCAA had on deck if the NFL canceled, just a complete onslaught on every freaking TV network trying to do that. And you know what? Lowering tickets isn't a bad idea anyway. I mean, if you're trying to generate interest, seriously, I mean, the Hawks, I think the season that they put together, that was one of the more interesting hockey seasons that I've ever seen, and it kind of rejuvenated the sport, just like the NBA did last year. Last year was an excellent NBA season.
Yeah.
Across the board, and people are shitting bricks if it doesn't come back, just like they did with football. Obviously, football is a much...
That Miami Heat storyline, I think basketball is going to hurt because that Miami Heat storyline is still kind of hot. You kind of want to ride that thing.
No one's going to miss them until maybe February because casual fans, except for me and my friend Steve, we're not going to watch until
Well, you know what's funny, though, Gordo? February. I think you would maybe agree with me. I don't know if we'd mind a 50-game season.
No, you know what? Do
you remember the strike year?
That was 99, was it?
It was awful basketball. It was back they had to play games three nights in a row, and they had no legs. And by the time the second or third game rolled around.
It was 50 games, correct?
Yeah, it was brutal.
What happens if they cancel, maybe Jason or Gordo, you guys know this. What happens if they cancel part of the season, but Kobe and Durant and Rose all sign with foreign teams? Can they leave those contracts to come back?
Yeah, the only league you can't leave is China. Like, they don't have an opt-out. But China's league runs to, like, March. So you could theoretically come back for the playoffs.
We were walking.
Yeah, most China. European teams have a contract clause where you can walk if you go back to the pros.
I saw something really creepy the other day. Lenny and Terzo and I, we were walking in Chinatown, and two of the buildings had the communist flag out. And I'm like, well, this is how it feels to be a Jew in Germany with the swastikas hanging out the window.
I'm sure. I don't know how collectively in Chinatown looked at YouTube goofballs and thought that was weird looking, too.
Three fat Italians who eat dim sum at three different restaurants. We went to three different restaurants to have dim sum.
Oh, America. Sumo wrestle. Oh.
And then Terzo's like, it wasn't that good, to dim sum. It's not so filling.
After all three?
Yeah, good times. Well, you know, we are going to the Shedd Aquarium this weekend. We have to all take Facebook profile pictures.
They're not going to. Which one are the fish?
We're going to the jellyfish exhibit. There's no whales at the Shedd Aquarium.
You lined up like a whale.
Yeah, I think there's manatees. I think Sam Simon will hate me, though, for going to the Shedd Aquarium. That's on the band.
Stand in front of the shark tank during feeding time on the off chance that the guy gets eaten.
Well, Sam Simon says SeaWorld is boycotted.
Yes.
I bet Shedd Aquarium's on that list.
Oh, yeah. How can those animals be taken care of?
I don't know. That Facebook picture's not going to be too great for Sammy Simon.
No.
He's going to look at it. It's a little opposite of him and the dog running on the beach.
Yes. A little opposite of, yes.
Well,
it's okay.
You know, I love Sam, but chill a little. I don't think animals are getting... Jellyfish are getting hurt at the Shedd Aquarium.
Couldn't tell you.
Jellyfish.
Maybe the gel. Maybe the gel squeezed out of them for your
hair.
All
right, all right. I just believe whatever Sam says, so I'll just go with what he says. All right, boycott the Shed. I'm still going.
All
boycott
I know about jellyfish is starting I shit on someone's foot once that got bit.
Oh, yeah, the jellyfish thing? Don't you got to pee on them?
I did. I don't even care if it worked. I just wanted to piss on the guy's foot. But.
Oh, God. That's got to be awkward.
Yeah.
That reminds
me. It's funny, are you?
If, like, a rattlesnake bites you, don't someone have to suck out the venom?
Yeah. Like in
I don't know. I was on vacation in Florida. I crushed about, like, 13 margaritas, and I just pissed all over his foot. I don't care.
Oh. Well, Jason's just saying he doesn't care if he... Caesar was saying no one pissed on his mom when she stepped on a jellyfish. Jason just didn't care. He just wanted to piss on somebody.
Well, no. This guy was
it's
an asshole. I was selective.
Like, don't beat around.
Golden
it.
Shower fetish,
that's
Chuck.
What it's called.
You know way too much about sex.
I do.
Charles, you've been to Silk one too many times.
Silk?
Yeah, the strip club we went to in Milwaukee on Lover's Lane.
Oh,
yeah.
Go away. I'm watching my World Cup.
I was watching.
Yeah, yes,
for
milk. Yeah.
Do you guys want a drink?
You got any milk?
I'd like some
2%.
I offered to pay that stripper $5 to leave me the fuck alone and let me watch World Cup.
It was a game you had already seen.
I said, if I give you money, will you get out of my way?
Wait, you were watching World Cup in a strip bar?
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Was it a gay strip bar?
No, it was a very straight strip bar, thank
with
you.
With very, very hot Wisconsin women.
It's the World Cup, man.
Wait, how do those words go together?
I know, but there were some hot women in there.
Don't you remember?
Well, I see some hotties in Madison, that's about it.
Well, this was gay, too. I pick up Chuck and Gordo, and they're like, where's the hotel? And I go, we're staying at a hotel on Lover's Lane Road.
I was praying that it would be the Sybaris and there would be a heart-shaped bed. And I just wanted to see the look on the attendant's face when me, Gordo, and Matt walked in there. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Who gets to sleep in the Taiwan basket?
Yeah. The best was, it was a strip club / comedy club. Remember they had the comedy club? Like right
Vince Neil was going to be there
and
in a week.
Vince Neil's been to every strip club in the nation.
Yeah,
I won't say his name on the air. You know the guy that runs Club O that we met?
Oh, yeah.
Him and I talked the other day, and he was just out in Los Angeles partying with Vince Neil at
a strip club.
So when Vince Neil's not running over people, he's going to strip clubs.
Wow.
Hold on a second. So you know how, like, one of the stripper anthems is girls, girls, girls. I mean, do they play that when they don't know he's there, and is it awkward for him, or does he block out?
I think you know when Vince Neil's coming, because I think he calls ahead of time and says, I want the best of everything, because he's Vince Neil. He's a dick. Like, they advertised Vince Neil at the strip club
we were at. He was hosting some contest there. I don't remember what it was.
How many contests can you have with strippers?
Wait, was it Milwaukee or was it Cleveland?
You
got to
be creative.
Where we ordered the two pizzas to decide which one
Cleveland.
Was
Cleveland.
Oh, that's where Steven Seagal was playing at the House of Blues.
Steven Seagal was playing at the House of Blues.
Oh, my God.
That's what makes Cleveland so great.
Cleveland rocks, isn't that correct? Wouldn't you say?
Cleveland rocks. All the pretty chicks.
Oh, yeah.
Then how come everybody...
We all watched Ashley Simpson and making the video.
This is what we missed.
Yeah,
in,
I hate you,
this
Gordo.
Is what we missed in Cleveland. We could have gone to Steven Seagal's concert.
Ooh,
girl, it's all right.
Girl, it's all right.
This is
Steven
Seagal.
Was he wearing a
boo-boo? No.
Wow.
Oh, God.
And he has a black choir backing him up.
And why shouldn't he? I want you
to stay. We missed this.
You know what?
Gordo,
I would want to see it.
Gordo, I kind of regret we didn't go.
Do too.
Me too. Yeah, in the musical interludes, he hyperextends some poor bastard's elbow.
You know, this would have been better than the crap you guys made me listen to on the car ride home.
You are liking the Steven Seagal song, I think. This is kind of weird.
for entertainment value, as I would see it.
Oh, for entertainment value?
It's good.
Well, you think Steven's going to bust out jokes during the show?
This is not going on my iPod, don't worry.
Why not?
I don't think they're playing Under Siege 2 behind him when he's singing.
Oh, the Dark Territory.
Yeah, the Dark Territory.
Why do you know that?
They had the best action movie names.
I know all kinds of shit that I don't ever need to know.
I don't know, Striking Distance is pretty good. Have you ever seen the preview for that movie?
Is that
pretty classic.
Bruce Willis?
Yeah, Bruce Willis and Robert
Pattinson. And Little Miss Riding Hood.
I don't know. I think Chuck's kind of into this.
I think so, too.
Oh, now he's in a church, and there's a bunch of black women that are standing behind him in the next part.
You narrate that so well.
Well, and there's a bunch of girls throwing water on each other, and they all have, like, Tahitian flowers in their hair.
That can only be
fat
good.
Steven Seagal that was in Machete.
Yes. This is Steven Seagal from, like, 3 years ago.
Listen,
if you want to watch a video that makes you snicker, I mean, Hooked on a Feeling by Hasselhoff is definitely solid.
Well, wait, do you want to hear something amazing about this video?
What?
It has it's on YouTube. It has 510 likes and 51 dislikes. So it looks like the likes are winning pretty big.
How many views?
I guess I didn't know Steven Seagal had 510 people in his family. I didn't know that.
You know what, though?
The Matthew Aaron Show's going to like this.
Well, while you're liking things, you know who has a bigger following is Ukulele Mike.
Ukulele Mike, who Pat Tobias won't let me get on the show.
What? He has 500,000 people following him.
I told you, he won't let me do it.
Or 500,000 views.
Jason, have you heard of Ukulele Mike? Oh, Gordo.
I don't know. Maybe drunk.
Maybe drunk?
No.
I don't think so,
no,
my friend.
You're sober because this guy's the nicest Hawaiian you'll meet. He's not a Hawaiian.
Well, no, I meant maybe I've heard of it drunk. It's not ringing a bell sober.
Oh,
okay.
Should I play
it? I don't mean that I have to be drunk
believing?
To listen to it.
You should play some Don't Stop.
Oh, you do need to be drunk to listen to this, but in a good way.
This Journey on a Ukulele?
Yeah.
Yes. He plays everything.
He teaches you how to play it. He teaches you how to play it, so I'm going to wait for
him. If he has that name, he better not be playing a fucking harpsichord.
Okay, here it is. Are you ready for Ukulele Mike?
Debut.
Do it.
Doing Don't Stop Believing.
On the Matthew Aaron Show.
He took the midnight train going anywhere. Singer in a smoky room.
And smell of wine and cheap perfume.
How they can share the night. It goes on and on and on. We have strangers waiting. Up down the boulevard, there's shadows searching the night.
It's actually better, right?
Yeah, it is.
Text message from me tomorrow because I'm sure the song's going to be stuck in my head for the next 18 hours.
The ukulele.
That would be so much better with bourbon.
Is that the Ukulele Mic effect, Chuck? You got him stuck in your head?
I am going to kill you.
That video only has 24,000 views.
Play one with 500,000.
Oh, he responds to people on here, too.
He does.
Yeah, there is a couple that he has like 500,000 hits on YouTube.
Come on, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
I've actually done a similar version of that song. I sang it at my friend's wedding with this jazz trio.
Was there a ukulele involved?
By the way, 91 likes,
rhythm.
91 likes, one dislike.
Who is the heartless bastard to dislike Ukulele Mike? Come on. Oh.
Who took the time to find some guy singing Journey on a ukulele and dislike it?
Exactly.
Yeah, at least I liked it.
Right.
I did take the time.
Just walk away. why dislike it?
Our fans got to wonder, like, what I do with my free time that I'm finding Ukulele Mike.
I think they got a pretty good idea.
We were together when we found Ukulele Mike. We were waiting for things to finish up.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I like that excuse. Yeah, we were rendering.
This was in between their Facebook posts.
Hey, I don't post that much. Four times a day.
Bruce Fretz
posts
way more than me.
Can I say one thing? Who gives a shit about who posts when and how much they post? It's their book. Let them post however much they want.
Ooh, I struck a nerve.
Well,
okay, here's 623,955 hits.
Holy shit.
Ukulele Mike. doing some Over the Rainbow, I guess.
That went up 100,000.
Me,
wow.
Where trouble melts like lemon drops, high above the chimney top.
This is bad.
This is bad.
This is really bad.
Hey, look, I'm trying to get him as a guest. Don't ruin it.
Come on, man. The other one was much better. This is brutal.
Oh, come on. I want him as a guest. I'm waiting until we're in L.A., though, so he can come sit in studio and play.
Flying from Hawaii.
Are you trying to get me to play a Jay Moore bit, Caesar? You know my feelings on Jay Moore. You don't? We've only ripped on him on this show like 10 times. Way to produce. Jason, Gordo, are you Jay Moore fans?
No, I'm indifferent.
So we're going to go 0-1.5.
Yes.
Well, I mean,
Jason went indifferent.
I have nothing on him to dislike him. I don't proactively seek out his material.
Okay. All right. Well, he does a very good Tracy Morgan impersonation. Fine. I'll play this.
I think he does a good – doesn't he do a good –
I'm not going to ramp up with it. I'm not ending this on a possibly bad Jay Moore note.
No, he's only
right.
Good walking.
4 minutes. It's 4 minutes? Is there
and
a
with
good
Nick
part
Lachey.
I can fast forward to?
Doubtful.
All right, I'll play it low so we can talk over it at least. Jesus.
That's our music
in
to talk
it
over.
In case it sucks. Oh. All right, well, if it sucks, I'll
whenever
play it.
Whenever a player leaves Boston, they immediately become a terrible player. Everyone in Boston completely forgets about the contributions of that person, unless it's Larry Bird. White.
Sounds weird with no fans.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, JJ, the Celtics, we got the best forwards in the league. We got freaking Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker. Antoine Walker's a monster, JJ. He shoots threes. He had 14 boards last night. The guy's retarded.
Okay.
Then they trade Paul Antoine Walker. Hey, how do you feel about that? Good. Good riddance. Antoine Walker was a bum. He was fat. All he did was shoot threes. He was a bum, JJ. That guy couldn't get 12 boards in a lumber yard. That guy was lousy. Johnny Damon is the face of his franchise.
Can you make a quick comment?
Do you have enough?
Quick comment.
We'll
play more.
All right.
But it sounds like I walked in on Jay Moore in his living room.
Yeah.
I picture him with like one of those 1970s tape recorders and a little microphone.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the comedy.
That was awkward.
My son Johnny, I named my daughter Damon. John, he's on the Yankees. Johnny Damon's got a rag arm. He's terrible. Good riddance.
No, rag arm. He's terrible.
Yeah, he's
Johnny
terrible.
Johnny Damon's a bum.
I have friends who are Boston
God.
Fans.
What a great infield. Kevin Millar, Nomar, Bill Miller. Well, Bill Miller's on the Cubs.
This is
he's
pretty bad.
Alcoholic.
Really? Do we have to
Bill
stick to
Miller
this?
Was drunk. I saw
and Matt knows I used to like Gary Unmarried.
Not anymore.
Wow.
I watched that show, too.
Wow. All you wannabe sports journalists watch Gary Unmarried.
Oh, yeah. That's why, too. I totally forgot that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And he actually ended up doing it at one point.
Yeah, he did. He did end up doing it. God, why did I watch that show? You.
I
was happy when the girl who played his wife showed her tits on Californication.
Oh, Paula Marshall? Yeah.
That would be it.
She showed her
jaws
hat.
On the...
Yeah, David Duchovny banged her and he threw up on a painting.
Yeah, it was great. But,
it was awesome.
But what other show was Paula Marshall
she
in?
She was on the
after? Shark
Nip-tuck.
And Nip-tuck. Shark and Nip-tuck.
She pooped in a pool in Nip-tuck.
Look, you act with Jimmy Woods. You're on my win list.
I miss Shark.
I miss Shark, too. Oh, yeah. But I heard the reason that show's no longer around is... They said they would have kept doing it, but Jimmy Woods had to cut back on costs, and that wasn't happening. And I also heard Jim Woods, when he works on a set, he kind of runs the show. If you're the director, that title don't really matter.
I was going to say, that's
if
cute.
If you're the producer,
that's cute.
That's cute.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of nice that you want to think that, but...
Do I got to play more of this, Jay Moore?
Please
Is it
don't.
Funny?
Oh. No, it's painful.
Well, if you ever need like a James Woods palate cleanser, throw in that vampire movie, you know, then you'll not like him for like a week.
By the way, I do want Gordo to know Dan Loria played a kitty rapist on SVU last night. And he
I watched it
fantastic.
Today. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I watched it earlier.
Yeah, and Ice-T was great.
And Heavy D.
and Heavy D. Ice T and Heavy D in the same room.
That's a lot.
Yeah, he offered him a job. Remember?
Yeah.
That guy keeps getting like, gigs, man.
Yeah, hey, look, if Ice T can act, and he's a good actor, I think. He's good on SVU. If Ice T can act, I can act.
Of course.
Did
that's,
you like,
that's your barometer?
Yeah.
If Ice T, well, I mean, I think.
It's a good barometer?
It is,
no?
Yeah.
If Jay Moore can act,
well, there
I can
you,
act.
I was going to say, there's your if. Because you usually
did you like Ice T's jump
better.
Shot?
Did I like Ice T's jump shot from last
Remember
night?
With,
yes, yes.
Yeah.
He's playing ball with the white guy that talks like he's from the ghetto. And
yeah.
he's like, oh, you see that? That's how it's done. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it was
tough. NWA, F the police, never going to sell out, right?
Right, of course.
Well, hey, who said Ice-T sold out? He plays a cop, a New York City cop.
Dr. Dre's doing Dr. Pepper commercials.
Oh.
Hey, it's overtime where we just talk to each other, or do people actually have to listen to this?
Oh, people actually listen to it, sadly.
Oh, sweet.
That's why I have the fart soundboard always prepared.
Always prepared. Get that little.
I always
out.
Have the farts prepared.
Oh.
That's what people think of the last 30 minutes of the show.
Oh, God.
Last 40
hey, are you going to send me that schedule so I know when to plan a trip to your basement?
My studio?
Studio apartment.
Did he say basement? Please.
Yes. That was
you know, there's women that listen to this show. And I don't like tossing in the basement
I've
around.
I've had my share of women in basements. They weren't afraid of it.
Hey, he tells his roommates that they got to be quiet while
this
he
would
does
make a great episode.
My cousin calls his dad his roommate.
Yeah, Chuck calls his parents roommates, too.
They're roommates.
Yeah.
It's against all the rules of living with people.
Where's the guy in the kitchen in his briefs? That's my roommate.
That's right.
Or dad.
So I shot out of my roommate's vagina when I was way back when.
All right, let's wrap things up, I guess, because Caesar's fucking crying over here. And when Caesar cries, I have to wipe his ass. So,
well, what kind
can
of
you do that in the other room?
I was, well,
no, I was gonna do it in front of y'all.
What kind of fart is made when you have to wipe his ass? It's a real question.
You better put on some gloves.
I think that actually made me have to go to the bathroom.
I don't know, but if this doesn't make you have to leak a little.
Put on some gloves, Matthew. And maybe
a
lot of seepage.
What music should I play on the way out? Anything good?
Now that we found love by Heavy D.
Ukulele Mike?
Yeah, Ukulele
Wait,
Mike.
Wait, did you
yeah.
just bring up Heavy D?
I said, now that we found love, because you brought up Heavy D. And now
yeah,
found
I was
going to
say,
love.
Did you just bring up Heavy D and the boys?
I've already yeah, you put a killer on this heavy in the middle.
Look, it's purple. I've already played this link on the show numerous times.
Oh, no.
It's even coming up on my computer as you've played this too many times.
Then go ukulele.
Play
now
some
that
Ice
we found
tea.
Love. Ice T. I haven't played any Ice T.
Beautiful.
How about Ice Cube? I like him more.
Yeah.
On the music side of things, I like Ice
Back
Cube
in 94,
more.
I liked the song.
You better check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
I did say check it to wreck it recently.
I don't want to hear today was a good day. I know what I want to hear. We be. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't. I spelt it right, which means I spelt it wrong.
Wrong, yeah.
Because it's in ghetto term.
What's the street name for that?
We be clubbing.
We be
and I put
clubbing.
The G on clubbing. Yeah, and I guess yeah, that was inappropriate.
No,
well, you're on Google or Gazoogle?
I'm on the YouTube. Well, gentlemen, thank you for calling in.
Yeah.
And I will send you a list of dates, Jason. And Gordo, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds
I'm
good.
Glad we got to bash Bill Simmons.
Yes, but Donnie Wahlberg rules. So.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. We're
See
headed
you,
out.
Gordo.
All right, later, guys.
We ought to get them slaughter. Baby, take my order. The only shark that swam in here in the water. Got your daughter doing shit you don't think she oughta. There's an order to slaughter any ass like that. Damn. You know how the lonely act goes to Cognac. Brainiac, wit, maniac, Mac Kid. Down to get this motherfucking party cracked in. Yeah. Nigga back in so we can smoke a dub. Down to bump all these bitches at the club. Everybody likes when the girl shakes. Bumping and banging like it ain't nothing wrong. Get your club on. Ah. With you.
everybody waiting on us. Yeah. And fuck, everybody hating on us. Yeah. Debating on us. But we only visiting and trying to fuck with niggas and lizard skins. No. I see you watching me. You should watch her. Yeah. Cause if she's sick of your shit, I'm gonna watch her, watch her. Show her 2D cards. She wanna meet these cars. They know who we are.
Where we
website, nigga. Meet me by the bar.